Hello, and welcome to the Negative World Podcast, the podcast about video games by Nintendo fans and NegativeWorld.org. This is episode 65, and we're recording this on Sunday, June 15th, 2014. I'm your host, Steven, and I am so excited to finally talk about some E3. First up, we have my co-host, Joe.
How's it going?
Hey, Joe. Haven't talked to you all week either, because
I know
I've been across the country, unable to communicate with the outside world, and you know, I'm trying this new cult, but I'm back, and I literally was in Atlanta, Georgia, 4 hours ago, maybe 5 hours ago. So I'm back up in the Mitt, and not only am I joined by Joe, I also have we have a bit of a shakeup in our roster from what we were discussing throughout the week, but we have one guest right now, and that awesome guest is
Chris Wright. Hey guys, it's one of three or four guys named Chris on the old Negative World, but this is the one with the Felix icon. So there, you can tell us apart that way.
Yeah, you know that those kind of things get mixed up. I constantly see Steven, the user, and sometimes think of myself. So
yeah, when did I say that? Yeah, that happens to me. It's like it's BG99 well, said that. Or, you
I've,
know.
I've been playing with him a lot in Mario Kart 8, and you know, we both have our name as the icon. So if he does better than me, I still claim it. But, but later, we're hoping to be joined by Peter, known as Octorokin, who was recently on an episode. He was originally scheduled for this episode, but he had a bit of a work schedule conflict, and he should be showing up hopefully within the hour, so he'll just jump in pretty much whenever he gets a chance.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Just to kind of let you know too that my wife is pregnant, and so she could go into labor pretty much at any moment now. So we're recording this on Father's Day. So part of the excitement, I think, of this particular podcast is going to be, you know, the tension of whether or not that happens. So. I could be halfway through giving my thoughts on Amiibo, and then it's time to bust, and then you guys can talk about whatever at that point.
Well, we'll speculate on, you know, the child's gender and name and middle name and what they're going to do when they grow up. We'll just talk about your future child.
How about we make a bet? Like, if she goes into labor during the show, I have to name the kid after one of you two. What do you think?
Whoa.
Sounds good. And middle name has to be based off whatever game we're talking about at the time.
Yeah, that's right. That'll be awesome. I would like you to meet
Stephanie
my daughter.
Amiibo.
Yeah, Steven, yeah, exactly.
Steven Splatoon.
I like, Joe Bayonetta.
Joe Bayonetta Wright.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. As long as it's not Joe Yoshi's Woolly World 2, that might be a bit of a mouthful.
Hopefully it's twin boys and you can just be like bros, you know, it'll work out. Anyway, so that said, we have a lot to talk about. I mean, the one thing I could do while I was away was watch the Nintendo digital presentation, I think they called it. And I don't know about you guys, but I, you know, as a pretty happy-go-lucky Nintendo fan, was very happy with what I was seeing. Very little in that thing disinterested me or I thought was corny. I mean, they did a really professional job of presenting a lot of cool stuff, a lot of new information, some surprises, particularly with the first game we'll talk about shortly, The Legend of Zelda. I was quite on the edge of my seat, despite being completely on a bed when I was watching it. But, you know, with candles and rose petals and all that. So,
good lord.
Yes. So to start things off, we're going to talk about the overall presentation briefly, because this was, even though they recently did, recently as in last year's E3, they did a Nintendo Direct. This time it was a digital presentation. It wasn't a Nintendo Direct, but it was essentially a Nintendo Direct, but they did, you know, kind of a different way of going about it. To start things off, they did a whole Robot Chicken thing, which was quite cool. I mean, Are you guys fans of Robot Chicken?
I'm not a big fan of Robot Chicken. I've seen sketches and stuff on YouTube mostly over the years, and you know, they always give me a chuckle. And I thought that they did a good job with it there. I actually hadn't seen enough Robot Chicken to automatically identify it as Robot Chicken getting involved. I thought it was, I guess if I had thought about it, I guess it's obvious. But when everyone was saying, "Oh, Robot Chicken was involved," I was like, Oh yeah, I guess so. The sense of humor is quirky, and that's an interesting thing about these directs, how the humor has gotten kind of quirkier and stranger over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and the Mario Kart 8 direct just a few months ago was bizarre almost. And so they definitely are trying some things to make them memorable for you.
Yeah, and I think it was successful in that sense. I mean, it was funny. The guy, they had the press guy clapping and bitching about Mother 3 and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good inside jokes for people like us who know all the Nintendo games and stuff. So
and it was cool too to see Wario show up, a couple other different characters that maybe aren't having games for themselves right now, but Nintendo still kind of referenced them. And I think Star Fox showing up was maybe a bit of a hint towards what we'd find out later. And then just seeing Reggie do campy stuff was kind of entertaining, because in a sense Reggie Fils-Aimé is a character to us. Yeah. He's the president of Nintendo of America, and yet he's had such a role over the past decade now or something like that, where he can kind of play this comical role. And even Iwata got into it with the Smash Brothers intro.
Yeah. I thought that was really well done. One thing I would say about the overall presentation, I think last year was a little splashy, I guess, but this year I think they really proved that this can work as an E3 strategy, because it was the whole presentation was, entertaining from start to finish. It was interesting, and there wasn't any fat on it. Whereas the presentations, you guys are probably like me, have seen lots of E3 stage presentations over the years, and there's always, the jackass can't get the controller to work, or here comes Flo Rida singing into a taco, or just stuff where it's like, what is going on here? They kind of proved that you could, if most of the audience for E3 is at home, and let's face it, most of the audience is, then why not pitch that presentation towards people at home? And so as a chump who can't get to E3, I think it's a better way to do it, actually. Although I do miss the opportunity to just heckle the crap out of all of the mistakes. But
I mean, that is quite a novel concept, if you really think about it. Ever since E3 began, the main audience has been kind of, I guess it started kind of around the time the internet was getting kicked off, so maybe not then, but in the past decade, if not longer, the home audience has been kind of the biggest, the biggest audience that they've had, and yet they've never catered to it until recently. They realize they have to capture us. That's why the past years we've had Best Buy demo events and everything. I really give them a lot of credit for it. The competitors aren't doing that. Not to say that what they're doing isn't working. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to catch up on anything Microsoft or Sony related. But from hearing what I've heard from other people, they kind of just did what you'd expect them to do, but they did it pretty well.
Yeah. I almost felt like this E3 marked, in a way, we'll see next year. Maybe next year Flo Rida will be back. But I almost feel like this year marked the beginning of the end of the old E3, where things could get a little crazy and out of control. Now, I didn't really watch the Microsoft presentation. I just let the other Steven give me a rundown of it. But it sounds like it was basically back-to-back footage of video games, and people who are big fans of the one and following that, that's probably what they want. And same with Sony. I did watch about 3/4 of the Sony presentation before I was like, I'm off to bed, forget it, but it was good. It was pretty much, games. It was very straightforward. And then, of course, the Nintendo presentation was really fun and exciting, but it was obviously, wall-to-wall games too. It seems to me like they're cutting out, even though the others aren't doing presentations the way Nintendo is, they're starting to realize that, you're taking a big risk going out there and doing kind of the weirdness that used to appear at E3. Rather than take big risks like that, better to go out and just kind of play it a little more safe.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And not to say that Nintendo, actually, to be honest, Nintendo wasn't playing it safe this year for content, but the presentation means that they can play it safe for was this the first E3 where we didn't come out with any crazy internet memes? Is it just me, or does it seem like that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, they referenced some recent memes, like the Fils-Aimé action, the Angry Luigi nod. But there was none from the direct or the presentation, because what was there to mock?
Yeah,
they really had it so
directed. It was tight. Yeah. And I mean, and the same thing for Sony and Microsoft, to their credit, I guess. Or I didn't. Maybe someone will pull it out, you know, pull something out and say, what about this? But I don't remember hearing anything like
that. Yeah, there was no giant enemy crabs this year. For sure.
No, there definitely wasn't. I would say for Nintendo, the only thing that was, I guess, less safe, I would say, is that, you know, they tried to be funny, which I think, as we all know, is really it's difficult to be funny, you know, on purpose. And they, to their credit, they actually pulled it off.
Which, I agree with that.
You know, for big companies to do is not necessarily, you know, sometimes their idea of humor is not what, you know.
I can't guarantee that non-Nintendo fans who are Nintendo fans first would understand these jokes and definitely, I think, enjoy it. Anyone who isn't there may not have thought it was as funny as we did, but Nintendo really kind of spoke to its audience through their humor. Robot Chicken doesn't necessarily speak to the audience in general. I mean, I'm sure there's tons of Nintendo fans out there who don't care about the show. I catch it on occasion, but I'm not in love with it or anything. I do appreciate when the show itself does nods to Nintendo. But, they definitely took some risks, and I think it paid off. And then, you know, the other thing that was part of this, besides presentation and then some trailers, was they gave us developer stories. And this has been done before, but I feel like when I've seen it in the past, it's been very kind of elongated, more still like a showpiece as opposed to a description. And what's nice about this versus the old school E3 methods, where you'd have some guy come out on stage and he'd kind of laugh and there'd be a clapping, and then he'd kind of demo a game and he'd talk to you live. A, it's not as fluid ever because people are trying to read their scripts and they, you know, they don't always succeed. And B, there's all this time spent in the same 45-minute window. There's time spent walking on stage, clapping, this, that. Here, they just cut to the next game, They had a hashtag in the corner so you could tweet about it.
Yep.
And then you got to hear the different developers, and you got to get to know these guys. And I certainly don't remember any of their names, but but I could connect with them about the game. I could see why Splatoon really should matter because of what they're trying to go for. That gives me more of an attachment than just, okay, it's them trying to do some sort of first-person thing.
Yeah, yeah. And the staging of that was really good, and we'll probably get to that, but I liked the way, you know, they did the Yoshi game with the yarn, and they're kind of in a I don't know, place where you buy yarn?
Yeah, a
yarn market.
What is it? High-stakes knitting.
High-stakes knitting.
Shop, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Back. yeah, you know, they didn't just have these guys in a on a green screen or in a white room. They had them kind of in particular areas. The Splatoon guys were in, like, an aquarium.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
And that's really cool. It's just visually, you know, entertaining, and it's better than a stage, which looks the same no matter what game you're displaying. So,
yeah. I mean, as far as being a product that we could consume here at home, it was a better product than what we usually get at E3. You know what I mean? If you're just going to say it as like a marketing pitch. Now, the thing I said last year when we did the podcast, it is still a concern I have this year, which is that part of E3 is about, you know, getting out there and kissing the ass of the press. And I am still concerned how Nintendo's managing that side of E3, but then it's probably just stuff on the show floor and maybe in the treehouse stuff. I mean, I don't know, you know, like, you know, trying to get people to talk about Nintendo's games. If you just kind of don't have the event, then you don't have I presume you wouldn't have the ability to get as much enthusiasm in the room. The kind of pep rally nature of E3, I think, must be harder to sell. And I don't know. You know, like, that's the kind of thing I don't have any insight in. I think we'll just see as we go. But so from the standpoint of someone who has to watch E3 at home, I think it's way better the way that Nintendo is doing it now. Mm-hmm. Whether it's as effective of a business strategy, you know, to as far as getting the press on their side, I don't know. You know, but whatever,
you know,
right?
That pushes me into a thing I actually forgot to put into my notes to maybe discuss. And so briefly, let's mention the Treehouse live events. I was in a class, you know, this week in Atlanta, and it was pretty tough to swallow. The guy was not teaching us very well. I was kind of just going ahead of things in the book myself. It was a kind of a software class that we use for work. And so, you know, on day two, I was like, you know what, I'm missing all the Treehouse stuff. How about I just put it on my laptop? And just, I couldn't hear it, but I could see footage. I could see these guys talking about it. And actually, there was a segment, I think, on the second day where I, you know, we had a break, so I plugged in the headphones and I listened to it and everything. And it was really cool. I mean, you had different casts of people. What's her name? Audrey...
Drake,
I think. Yeah, Audrey Drake, who went from IGN and now works at Nintendo. I mean, she's always sweet to listen to and to watch. And a bunch of other Treehouse guys that we've kind of seen before. And then a bunch of people we haven't seen. But, you know, you don't have any Adam Sesslers or Morgan Webbs, you know, shitting on things. You just have these people who like the games and are playing them and showing them off, talking about little details here and there, and you're getting direct feed footage, and then you're cutting back occasionally to them playing. But it was wonderful. Like, I so dug it. And they were interested in showing us as much as possible. So one of the things I did catch was the 3DS Smash Brothers, and they were showing us different levels, talking about the little intricate things here. They would stop fighting for a second and be like, oh, hey, let me do this to you. Check this out. And then they would show us that as opposed to just, like, battling and trying to see who was better, which you kind of got at the Smash events because nobody took the time to see the details. They just want to kick each other's ass. But it was really nice. Even on the games that I wasn't too interested in, I still was kind of engrossed in watching these people.
Yeah, I was going to say that about it. I didn't watch a lot of the Treehouse stuff. I saw some of it, but, you know, I have a job, got to work, but the stuff that I caught was really cool. And something that I saw interesting on the boards were people who saw maybe a game during the conference or the event that they didn't really care about or whatever. And then they saw the Treehouse footage. And I mean, I saw this over and over again on Negative World where people said, you know, Splatoon, I didn't really care about it, but then I saw them playing it. That game looks fun. Same kind of thing like with the Yoshi. You know, I heard that kind of response too. So to me, that was kind of cool. Just speaking from the standpoint of, well, I mean, as a Nintendo fan, it's just cool to think, okay, you know, before someone demos a game on the stage and then that's the extent of the E3 coverage we really see. You know, maybe you don't get the games.
You know, because that's what we get after the main shows. You just get this footage from the show floor of someone playing it, and then they're in line, they're running out of time, they don't have that much time to show you what they want to show you, and sometimes they're just jackasses about it.
Yeah. Again, Adam Sassler sitting there, you know, running around in a circle and making some dumbass comment. You know, like that's not a fun way to discover Mario Galaxy 2, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas this would be a much better way. And is it more controlled? Of course. Is it more, you know, straight from the horse's mouth of Nintendo? Sure. But, you know, is what those other guys were doing on E3 the last few years journalism? No. So really from the standpoint of, like, all right, just give me what I want, which is footage of the game, and I don't care if it's sympathetic coverage or corporate coverage. I can make my own decision about it, but let's see it, you know? And I think that was a pretty cool idea, and I hope it remains a part of their strategy in the future. So,
I think it has to. I mean, I think that was such a wild success. As good as the digital event went over, I think it was really the Treehouse stuff that really won people over as far as Nintendo's presence this year. And I think what really made a difference is, it was people that work for the company. But I don't know about you guys, but for myself, the people I talked to, it didn't feel like a corporate sell.
No, it felt like there were a bunch of chairs in the Nintendo booth, and they just set a camera on them and didn't stop them from recording.
It just felt like a bunch of people that could be your friends that are just hanging out playing these games they happen to love. And, oh, by the way, the famous developer stopped by and has some insight on how the game was created, you know?
Which is what we all wish would happen at the booth.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I want that to happen to be at home. I'll book Miyamoto a flight.
That's what Nintendo needs to do next, is just have, like, live drop-ins, you know?
And, you know, I usually, by this time of year, classes are done, so I'm on summer break. But so, I'm able to watch them, and I watch the presentations, the conferences in the past. You get a few minutes of each game and a total of, 45 minutes to 90 minutes for the whole conference. And then that's it. And then the rest of the week is, refreshing blogs to hope to get another little tidbit of information or something. But this year it was like me and a bunch of online buddies just sitting in the chat room, binge watching like a bunch of nerds. They talk about E3 being like gamer Christmas, and that phrase is maybe kind of lost meaning over the last couple of years. This felt like gamer Christmas to me. This was like a celebration all week. It was so fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
So let's touch upon one more thing, and then we'll take a short break to get Peter in, because Peter is ready to chat with us.
Awesome.
But while we wait for him to kind of get ready, the show, you know, was a nice 45 minutes long. Reggie was finishing up at 41 minutes, and I was like, okay, well, what are you going to show us? Obviously, it's not the end. And, actually, that reminds me, too, there was, in the Nintendo Treehouse, there were no commercials or anything, which
oh
I love.
Oh, my God,
you know?
Yes.
They would take a two-minute break or one, it wouldn't even be even. It'd be like, here's
90
one,
seconds.
Yeah, 90-second break. And all it would be doing is just resetting the stage, starting a new game. So you couldn't go take a whiz. You had to bring, you know, your computer with you to the bathroom so you wouldn't miss coverage. Anyway, so the reason I mention that is because there was a few minutes left at the end of the show, and instead of it being some sort of cheesy, I don't know, ad or something, not an ad, but, you know, something silly, they have this animated cartoon in a really nice anime style that almost looked like Captain N, but Japanese, and it was to show off a new Smash Bros. Character, which I thought was pretty cool that even though we just got a bunch of Smash characters, they still kind of wanted to give this big presentation to another one. Joe, pronounce her name, please.
Palutena. That's
Palutena,
how I.
Palutena. Okay.
Yeah. well, that is actually when they released Kid Icarus Uprising, they had a bunch of different animation studios do little shorts to go along with the game. So yeah, I'm assuming this is just them getting back in touch with one of them. I forget the names of them, and just, you know, asking for a little more for Palutena. Yeah.
Well, what I'm loving, though, is just the differences. I mean, the Little Mac one was in its own art style. This one's in its own art style.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm appreciating the difference.
Yeah.
I love the fact that they had, they're sticking with the voice actors, too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of unsure how big of a success Nintendo views Uprising. I'm a huge Kid Icarus fan, have been for a long time. You can read the ridiculous fan fiction crap that I've put on Kid Icarus. So huge fan of that and huge fan of Uprising. But the I was kind of worried because they really won me over with the voice acting. The Sakurai's kind of approach to the characters, like, I really love. And I'm glad to see they're not dropping it, you know. It's like, still bring it up, you know. So
yep. I'm going to hold out hope for a sequel someday.
Yeah, me too. Me too, man. I also like, that's a point I was going to make. Yeah, I'm out of steam. Never mind.
All right. Well, we'll take that little, funniness to take a quick pause, and we'll get Octorokin back in here. So we'll take an early break, and we'll be back to talk about Super Smash Brothers. We have Octorokin now on the podcast. How's it going, Peter?
It's going good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for showing up. Glad you could join us. We have Chris Wright here as well.
I'm still here. Mm-hmm. Baby hasn't come yet, so... No.
Wouldn't that have been a bitch if that happened right during the break? You know, so we got one guest and then we lost another. If it does happen today, maybe you can... You know, bring your child home in time for the podcast on Tuesday because we're going to record another one. Maybe they can join it.
Absolutely, we can get her thoughts on Amiibo. I'll just.
But I think the toddler's limitations of thoughts would be like, "How does it taste?" You know. okay. So as I said before the break, we're going to jump in and talk about Super Smash Brothers. It wasn't my original plan, but I misspoke. So we'll just go with it. It was arguably one of the biggest games at the Nintendo's E3, and for good reason. They really kind of blew out a lot more. I mean, they've had a lot of coverage already, but they know that this game's coming out this year, and there's no other opportunities really to show things off in a big way, unless they do their own direct. But they knew this was the time to kind of show off a lot more characters, give us a lot of experience with it. I mean, they did that with the Treehouse live presentations as well. I mean, the Wii U version had its own moments, the 3DS had its own moments, and they constantly did that throughout the 3 days. I guess what I wanted to mention first, I mean, there's so much to talk about, I'm not even sure where we should begin, but I did want to mention that the 3DS version slips to October 3rd. That was kind of a bummer. I mean, how do you guys feel about that? Did you really want it to come out in the summer, or are you okay with it being pushed till fall?
Yeah, it's the day before my birthday, so I'm like, hey, birthday present locked down, son, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a bit of a bummer, but I'm going to be so busy with the baby this summer that it's fine with me. But
You have till October 3rd to teach it to, you know, take care of itself.
Yeah.
Awesome. You know, I mean, and there was so much debate recently, too. It's just funny because people were saying, well, this is such a bad move for Nintendo to have it come out in the summer when, you know, we're going to know everything about the game and the roster and everything by the time the Wii U one comes out. Well, now they're coming out within a month or two, depending on... Oh, we're still in the tarmac. All right.
Oh, no.
That's okay. We'll deal with that.
I'm sorry. I thought it sounded like a monk chanting
back
there.
Yes, it
like,
did.
No.
It did. We could have a new theme.
It was a little bit different, yeah. I don't remember what I said before that. Maybe it was relevant, but...
Well, you were talking about the moving the dates and how people
were now they're coming out so close to each other that you wonder if the strategy, I mean, I think the original strategy is going to be, it's, you know, probably the 3DS version is a bit more of a hard sell. I mean, not really. I mean, it's Smash Brothers, but, you know, it's never been on portables before. Maybe there's a thinking that, you know, get that one out, people get a taste of that. And I think most of us are going to agree that the big version is going to be the Wii U version. Now, if they're coming out that close to each other, you know, it might be, you know, I can wait a month to get the Wii U version. And, I mean, I don't know if it'll affect 3DS sales or not, but, I mean, I could see it happening.
Having played them both at the Smash Fest event this Saturday, yesterday, I can kind of see that as just being the mentality. Whether it's true or not is one thing, but the Wii U version looks so damn good. And for fans who have been with it, they've only played on consoles. That's what they know. That's what they want. I think this will make it a bit of a harder sell for the 3DS.
Yeah. But, I mean, that said, for guys like us on Negative World, it's a day one sale anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I will still get the game. It could come out the day before, you know, and I'll pick it up. So it doesn't affect me. And even the pushback for me personally isn't that big of a deal. But, I mean, I don't know.
I guess I'm just curious now, what are they going to fill, or, you know, what are they going to put in there? I mean, we got some release dates for, like, Hyrule Warriors and some other games. I haven't seen an actual overview of what is supposed to be coming out the rest of this year, but that was supposed to be a summer game that I pretty much expected to get me through until until fall.
Yeah.
And now it's not going to do that. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, looking at the list that we're going to talk about, I mean, Splatoon is for next year, Captain Toad is for holiday season, I think. Hyrule Warriors is until September. Yoshi's Woolly World, I'm not sure when that's supposed to come out.
Guess you can do a lot of gardening in Animal Crossing New Leaf until Smash comes out.
Yeah, I guess so. I have been getting back into it to try to do some new things with my town, but I mean, I still haven't fully unlocked every single, or gotten, you know, the full stars on every single cup in Mario Kart. I haven't beaten Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze yet. There's stuff to do. I haven't, I know. But absolutely, it was kind of a bummer. But let's move on from that. I don't want to get stuck on this. At least the Wii U version stays at holiday 2014. So that hasn't budged. And I don't think that they can risk it budging either. I mean, they probably can. We'll all buy it, but we'll just be pissed.
Well, there has been some, you know, rumblings of like, it's not a hard release date, like, you know, is it gonna make it in time for the holidays? And I don't know, they gotta get that
I feel,
right?
Like the only reason it's holidays because they don't know if they want to go with Thanksgiving or Christmas, you know. So it's just a matter of, well, do we need the extra month or not?
Right
Why lock themselves in now when they, you know, because releasing it maybe at Thanksgiving is probably better than releasing it near Christmas. However, if they can't make that, they don't want to promise it.
Sure.
And if they can make it, then they don't want to have promised Christmas. And then, I mean, I guess they could bump it up, but I don't know. Some crazy nuts out there will say, "Oh, it's rushed now. They're just trying to get it out the door." So, Dan, if you do,
I would say, just going by the E3 content alone, I wouldn't see them pushing it back next year after all the like hype that they built up during the entire event.
Yeah.
That's true, and we've seen a ton of stages, a ton of characters. I mean, we've seen, what, all close to 30 characters now?
Yeah, had a big tournament. You know, people are playing the game, you know, even locally, like at Best Buys and stuff. Yeah. Like, I definitely think it would be coming this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree. And that's what I was saying, is I think that they've done so much work to get it in our faces that they're planning for this year. It's just, no, you know, it's locked down. They probably already know what day they want to release it. They just don't announce it yet.
Yeah. But, right. I mean, and it goes back, I think everybody agrees with this, though, that, you know, we can wait a couple extra months if we have to. They have to push it back like they did with Brawl.
It was like three times with Brawl. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was frustrating. I'm not going to say I'll be happy about it. But at the same time, you know, a buggy game is forever, you know. I mean, I know they can release patches and stuff like that.
But Nintendo doesn't.
We have that yeah.
Well, they do, but.
Yeah, but we have that advantage now, so that is true. So that probably makes it more likely to be holiday. Mm-hmm. I'm not gun shy about it. I think we'll get it, you know, by, you know, obviously this year by Christmas.
Well, and you know, not to dive into this too early, but they are planning Amiibo support, and they're planning to, you know, start Amiibo in the holiday as well. So I think it's a big core holiday shopping experience they're going for, a 1-2 punch, Amiibo and Smash Brothers. So that's another reason I'm convinced it's locked in.
And they know they need it. You know what I mean? Like, they know that this is a big thing, you know, for the success of the Wii U. They need it to be a success this year at Christmas. So
would you argue that this is the moment? And either, you know, if they succeed at this, then Nintendo has a good shot at, you know, a stable lifespan, and if they don't, then they pretty much blew it? Or do you think it's not so hinged on this?
Well, I mean, I almost, if you'd asked me that a year ago, I would have said no, you know, but I mean, obviously the Wii U still, I mean, it's getting more positive press post Mario Kart 8, so that's good. But, I mean, I haven't seen the sales. I mean, I don't want to sit and talk about business the whole time because there's a lot more exciting stuff to talk about. But, yeah. I mean, I would say this is a big moment. If they miss this, not just the holiday sales, but the excitement, the hype kind of dies down around Smash Brothers because they release it in March or some crap, you know, I think that's, you know, yeah. I think it's going to be pretty hard to recover at that point.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's move away from the business side. I want to get you guys' opinions on the new characters that they've announced. So we now have Miis playable, which was pretty much the start of the show. After they did their opening presentation, you know, they did an Iwata and Fizume battle, which I knew they were going to go towards something like this. I was thinking they were going to go to them as being actual characters, just them. And some sort of, like, here fanboys have this little trinket. But instead they did the Miis, which I think is even better. And what seals the Miis as being, like, a positive thing for me is the fact they have three different types. So you really can customize your Mii experience into a brawler, a sword fighter, or a gunner. And so, I don't know, I think that's really great. Good to see. They also gave us Palutena.
Yep.
You know, which was kind of a surprise, and definitely for weeks, if not months, people have really wanted her to show up after there was a certain tease some months ago on one of the screenshots. Yeah. So that was a kind of a great, satisfying reveal. And then late, I think it was Tuesday night, but late Tuesday night, I was just going to bed at like midnight, and suddenly Pac-Man was a playable character. So that was pretty cool. And even though he's the 3D Pac-Man, who I have no attachment to, his 8-bit moves and everything are really nicely done, and I think he's going to be a great character to join, you know, join the battle. So, Chris, let's get your thoughts first. You know, which characters, if any, spoke to you, or why?
Sure. Well, all of them are pretty good. Palutena is probably my most wanted character, so I'm going to play with her quite a bit, I think. You know, I'm just a huge fan of the Kid Icarus franchise. There's also a hint that Dark Pit may even be his own character. Yeah. Obviously, I don't know if that's going to be just a color swap or how they're going to handle that. So
who knows? They certainly kind of put it out there a little bit.
Yeah, that it could be. So we almost got at least a tease that there might be another option there. So any Kid Icarus representation is going to make me happy. Palutena is a long time coming, I think. So really excited about that. I was kind of mentioning earlier today on the boards that, you know, Pac-Man really for me was the first video game that I fell in love with as a little boy, and I had the sheets and ate the SpaghettiOs, and you know, and I watched the cartoon show and all of that. I dressed as Pac-Man for Halloween one year, so I mean, I'm not kidding. That was ridiculous. I looked like a big yellow blob.
Did you eat like golf balls down the street?
Yeah. no comment. No, but I mean, I probably looked like I went as a tennis ball for Halloween that year. But
nice.
You know, I really loved Pac-Man, and I'm kind of like you, even though that's not quite the design of Pac-Man that I cared about as a kid. I mean, it does seem to me like, look, so he is a character who fits in with Smash Brothers. You know, we've got Mega Man in there representing Capcom. We've got Sonic in there representing Sega. It makes perfect sense that, you know, Pac would be in there. And so I'm definitely going to play with him. I like the little Galaga moves and, the, you know, throwing the kind of 8-bit ghosts around and all of that. So I think he'll be a strange character. I mean, I think it actually at the end of that reveal, they kind of have him with Game & Watch, like sort of representing sort of the oldest characters in the game, I guess.
Yeah, and kind of another possible hint that Game & Watch could be coming back. That was never confirmed, yeah. But just like with Dark Pit, you know.
Yeah. But I think he may be a bit like Game & Watch as far as kind of an oddball character to play, but I think that kind of suits him because mm-hmm. of his age. So definitely excited about that. The Mii Fighters, it's – I mean – that's the right way to do the Miis, I guess. You know, I like it. I'm a big fan of my favorite game of last generation was Wii Sports Resort. So I like it as a kind of representation of the Wii Sports. I mean, I know we have the Wii Fit Trainer, but, you know, kind of specifically the things that they were doing with Wii. So I think it fits in really nice there. I think one of the hidden, and they kind of hinted at it, but one of the hidden advantages of it is, you know, you can not just make yourself, but you could get, you know, Ice-T, or there's kind of an odd list actually of like of celebrities there, but you know, the idea that you could, because I like the other day I was playing Mario Kart and someone made the best damn Hank Hill that I've ever seen. I mean, it looked like I was like Hank Hill was in Mario Kart, and when you think about that, that would be really fun for Smash Brothers Brawl to kind of have. Oh, I'm sorry, with the new Smash Brothers, to have you know, different characters, weird little you know, here's Conan O'Brien in the game, or you know, whoever, you know, just as a joke. So
I feel like we're going to see a lot of Zoidbergs.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I had my sister playing Mario Kart with me a couple weeks ago, and she was awesome. Well, yeah, like two weeks ago, and she was Austin Powers. You know,
that's
so,
who that was.
Yeah,
I was racing with you on that. That was hilarious.
Yeah, so because that was just one of the. I don't have too many Miis on my Wii U, but that's one of them. So it was just kind of fun, and so. I mean, I'm not going to be playing as Austin Powers in Smash Bros. And quoting him or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, either. I might, but it's cool that that's there. And even though Reggie said, this is, you know, for anyone who wants a character, this is your answer. Well, not exactly, but it's close enough.
Yeah.
It really does kind of at least give someone something. I feel like Nintendo's trying to answer to people's calls the best they can.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a simple pleasure to play as Austin Powers in Smash Brothers, but, you know, it'll be a pleasure nonetheless.
Sure. Peter, how do you feel about these three?
I'm actually pretty excited to play as all three of the characters. The Miis are especially interesting to me because I didn't really know what to expect out of Mii characters. I kind of had a feeling they were coming, but I just expected a just like one basic Mii, maybe with like... with just like one certain moveset, but having, you know, three varieties, like you were saying, and even like, didn't they mention, or Sakurai mentioned that they would have like customizable Smash moves as well?
Yeah. Of all characters in the game, the Mii Fighter will have the most options for its moves.
Yeah. So, I mean, even just from a fighting standpoint, I think they're really exciting characters, but like Chris mentioned, just having the ability to basically put anyone you want into this Smash Bros. Game is really cool, and the simple designs for all three of the fighters just look great. I just think they look like really like cool looking characters, like a nice twist on the Mii. And I always like seeing Miis integrated into games, interestingly, like that recently released Tomodachi Life and stuff like that. So I think it's a really cool idea. Pac-Man, I think Pac-Man is also a great addition. Like Chris was also saying, you know, it just feels natural to have him standing next to Mario and Sonic, and yeah, I think that's great. The only thing that was disappointing to me is that his little, like, you know how characters have, like, plays on words when they're introduced to this game?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see something that just said, like, Pac-Man, Waka Waka's into battle or something like that. But, yeah, really excited to play as him. And
wasn't that Pac-Man stage cool, too?
Like, oh, was there a...
Was it the 3DS one that they showed?
I think it was 3DS.
I don't know what I saw. I thought it was a 3DS one though. That looks like the Pac-Man stage, kind of like.
Oh, that's great.
That Donkey Kong stage from Brawl.
Yeah,
like the old school Donkey Kong game.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Kid Icarus Uprising, like Joe. So Palutena is just a fantastic addition to the roster, in my opinion. Her moves looked like sort of an alternate take on Zelda's, just like a lot of magic and a lot of really interesting tricks. So I'm sure she'll be a very fun character to play as, and just more Kid Icarus Uprising stuff is great to have. I mean, the Smash Brothers game, it's really incredible how much Kid Icarus Uprising is in it. Just that one game had so much content to pack into a Smash game, and it's great to see, like, how do you pronounce it? Like, Magus as a assist trophy, like all these Kid Icarus Uprising items, you know, Palutena, like an updated Pit. It's really cool.
Well, even as someone who doesn't really seem to care about the series like I do right now, I can tell that Uprising gave it, like, opened the door for the Kid Icarus franchise as far as giving it substance.
Exactly.
So I see, you know, that's what they're doing here. They're just fleshing it out even further. I wouldn't doubt that if they, you know, work on another Uprising or some sort of sequel down the line.
Yeah.
Once Smash Brothers is all wrapped up.
Oh, I remembered what I was going to say earlier. What I would like to see, obviously I would love to see a Uprising 2 or something, but even just a port of it to the Wii U would be really great, because the big thing about the 3DS version is the controls, like, are controversial. And while I like them, I can't really argue that the hand cramping thing wasn't there. But if they could do a dual analog version of it, while, you know, and you could still do basically have both options on the Wii U version, I think a lot more people would get a chance to experience it and maybe enjoy it. So,
right. And the Wii U gamepad, you know, has a stylus. So, if you, like you were saying, if you prefer the original controls, you have a bigger screen to work with, and that might work to some extent.
Yeah, agreed.
What would you call a game like that?
I would call it Kid Icarus Uprising.
Put him.
Whoa.
Nice.
Joe, any comments you want to make about these characters?
Not really anything that hasn't already been said. It's nice to see Pac-Man, just because you get that so many different companies in one game thing, as Chris said. Love Kid Icarus, as I both said. And the Mii Fighters, I'll just say, yeah, I'm impressed with the diversity of the move sets, and, you know, it's not just like, oh, here's a custom face that you put on a generic fighter. It seems like they're really going to have their own unique feel in the games, and that's, I was impressed by that. So what about you?
I mean, yeah, again, everyone's kind of covered everything, but the one thing that I do want to add about the Mii Fighters is we can finally settle the Negative World discussions about who would kick whose ass. You know, we can just play matches together over the internet. Hopefully it's good.
Well,
and as ourselves.
Okay, so you can't use them with randoms, but you can with friends? Is that how, because they mentioned something about that, right?
I didn't catch it, but I wouldn't doubt it, just so you don't have, like, vagina face, you know,
penis man,
child.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. But can anyone else confirm, is that what it is? Is it you can do with friends but not randoms, or was it no online?
I hadn't heard that, but you know what's, you know, you can use Mii's online just fine.
Yeah,
so
that's
if they've
true.
Got, you know, problems with, you know, penis or whatever, you know, they're going to have that as it is. So,
That's a good point.
I'll do some quick Googling while we continue.
Okay. Well, then the only thing that really is left to talk about, although we've kind of just, I don't know, there's so much to talk about, we probably shouldn't stick here too long, but when I was watching the Treehouse live events, it was really cool to see the levels, mainly. That's what I was getting a lot out of those, was just seeing the different levels that we already know about to an extent, but just seeing the different things that are happening in them. I just wanted to run down some things that I saw. In the Tortimer Island level of the 3DS version, it does constantly change. Fruit grows on the trees and falls off and gives you health randomly. The coconuts will grow on there as well, and those you can't eat, but you can throw them as projectiles. So I like the idea of the level being dynamic just by default. And even though items, of course, spawn randomly, it's pretty cool to see kind of the Animal Crossing version come out. And then I think there's occasionally a shark that swims up, that kind of thing. These little touches are all over the place.
I did hear something. Did you bring up that the map is supposed to be like randomly generated to some extent?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. I might have glazed over that.
Like, the trees will show up where just in random spots, and yeah, they'll go away and they'll come back. I'm not sure exactly how it changes, but I know that the sides of the island will change as well. Tortimer comes over with his boat on either side randomly. There's just a bit more of what we've seen maybe in past games, but they've really taken it to a whole new level.
Yeah, and seeing these stages in action is definitely a lot more exciting than just seeing them in screenshots. Like, when I first saw Tortimer Island, it didn't look that impressive to me, but like all the things you mentioned definitely makes the stage seem much mm-hmm. more enjoyable.
Well, and each stage really seems to be catered to a certain experience. Like, the next one that I saw was the Golden Plains level, which is from New Super Mario Bros. 2. You know, and that game was so coin crazy, the whole point of it was to collect as many gold coins as possible. And in this level, there are tons of gold coins to collect. And as you play and you're jumping around and kicking each other's butts, after 100 coins, your character becomes golden, and you take damage as normal, but you won't flinch. So you kind of Ooh. Have that kind of... Yeah, you, for a little while, you don't get pullback. And that's cool for especially, I think, the people who are really tight fighters, who that would really matter. To me, I don't even really notice when I flinch. I just fight, you know? But and the level seems to move from left to right and then back. So it's almost like two different static stages that just shift. Almost like that Red Devil or whatever his name, you know, that thing. But it just entire screens. There's also the Gerudo Valley level, which we already kind of knew about this stuff. The bridge breaks. Unfortunately, the carpenters in that tent don't fix it. It just kind of magically fixes itself. But Kotake and Kume, they come by and they attack with fire and ice, which is a nice touch. And then there's the Nintendogs level, which, you know, there's the dog in the background, which is really kind of cool and adorable. But blocks randomly will fall down to create like a dynamic stage in front of you, almost in a Pokemon Stadium kind of way, but just with play blocks. And actually, you can get hurt by them if you don't move out of the way when they're falling. So just cool things like this really made the 3DS specifically stand out to me. And then I didn't see too much of the Wii U one, unfortunately, but the boxing ring stage, I don't know if it actually is specifically with Little Mac and Punch-Out or not. I think there might be two versions, but I saw that there's those lights up at the top, and if you use it as a platform, eventually if you attack it enough, it'll come crashing down on everybody, which is pretty sweet. And I totally, like, as I was waiting in line at the Smash event, I was waiting for someone to do that, and they did, and I was like, yes, that looks so cool, because it totally caught people off guard. Clearly the guy knew, because he jumped up there right away and started attacking it. You know, I do want to speak briefly about my experience at the Smash event. Did anyone else go to that?
No.
Nope.
I tried to go like a week early, because I swear there was someone who linked to someplace on the forums, and I saw something on Best Buy's website that said it was happening like the week before E3, so I'm there poking around like a jackass looking for, you know, like there's no line. And then I checked my phone and realized I need to learn how to read a calendar.
Some people in my line were saying that it was originally on Thursday for them, and then it was moved to Wednesday, which I never heard anything like that. So maybe there was some weird reports going around.
Yeah. I swear I saw the actual dates, and I had it right, but obviously I didn't. So.
And then you woke up. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, it's all right. I'm dreaming about it.
Well, so, you know, I was in Atlanta, so I was far from home, and I was like, you know what? It just turns out that my hotel is near the Buckhead location of in Atlanta. So I was like, I got to go, you know? And I ended up, my mother was with me because it was a work trip for us, and she agreed to just hang out with me for a little while, so I didn't have to go by myself, and she wasn't just going to be stuck at the hotel or whatever. So we decided to go have breakfast near there so we could at least be quick to get in line when the time came. We drove to Best Buy, and then figured we'd find some breakfast nearby, and we drove past, and the line at 10 o'clock in the morning was already like 20 people, and I was like, shit. Wow. I mean, the store's not even open yet because it was like 9:55. So she hops out, gets her place in line. I go get us bagels. I don't get back till 10:30, and they had let everyone in. And by that time, the line had more than doubled.
Oh, my God.
So we're talking an hour and a half before the event. There's already maybe 50 people in line. So, of course, I take my place with her. She goes into the car and has her bagel, and then she comes back out, and then just, you know, we hang out for the rest of the time. But it was nuts, man. And then they brought in people from Wednesday who had wristbands because they literally didn't get a chance to play because they had to close the store. So that line came in, and that was a little bit longer than I wanted it to be, but for almost an hour before noon, they actually let those people start playing to kind of get them out of the way because they didn't want to hold us all up because literally there must have been 200 people at least by the time maybe the event had started.
Wow.
So it was, I mean, Atlanta's a big city, so I kind of understand that. I think the one by my house at home would have been smaller based on last year's event, but this was unprecedented, and I'm really glad that we drove by that Best Buy instead of waiting, because I was going to go there an hour early. That was my plan, but 2 hours was clearly necessary. And I didn't get to play till a little after 1 o'clock, so we were there for, you know, in line for 3 hours, and luckily what happened afternoon had hit, and the event started. They took four from the one line. They got to play, then they took four from our line, and they kind of alternated. So that was nice. And what we got to do, we got to play two-minute matches, you know, switching up characters and levels each time. Before we got to the big event, there was someone going around with the 3DS version. I got to play that. And I played as the villager character on the 3DS, which was a risk. But, I mean, I wanted to play as that character for so many years that I thought I had to do, that had to be my first chance with the game. Sure. But the character is very hard to understand. I mean, kind of like Olimar was. It's a unique character with unique moves, and it's not a traditional fighter by any means. So I was kind of just doing some basic hits and not being very efficient. Plus, it felt weird on the 3DS. It was just different. You know, I don't play fighters on the 3DS. Maybe people who do won't have such of a problem, but I'm so used to holding up, you know, a classic controller or a GameCube controller or something, and here I'm holding just the 3DS, and it was different. But we did a Smash run. Sorry, you're going to say something?
I was going to say, it had the 3D look on it. Did you get a chance to really evaluate that?
That's another thing. So they had the 3D off because, you know, the woman's got a battery pack on. She's got two DSs attached to her belt, and that battery's got to last as long as possible.
I'm sorry, it never occurred to me that, yeah, carrying the 3DS around, they'd have to chain it to somebody to make sure no one beats her up and steals it. So. Yeah.
So she was a total delight to talk to, by the way, to one of the Nintendo reps. And she actually used to work for Ubisoft, and she was like, I want to go work for Nintendo. So that was kind of funny. Yeah. But so she had the 3D off, and I realized this after I did the 5-minute Smash run, where you kind of beat up guys and you earn your points, and then you go into an actual battle. And I thought I was playing with the guy who had the other one, but that wasn't the case. So I probably didn't play as efficiently because I wasn't really sure what was going on. And in the end, I just fought a 4-player computer battle, and I had so-and-so stats going on. I didn't understand it at all. I need more time with it. But for the battle, I was like, oh, shoot, this isn't... 3D's not on. So I turned the 3D on, and it was pretty good. I'm not going to say it's spectacular. I think with more time, I'm going to want to keep playing with it on. I'm sure when characters are flying towards the screen or weapons are being used, it'll be even more fun, but I got a very limited experience because after that 5-minute Smash run, I think it's a 1-minute battle. It's a very quick thing. So that at least was the settings that I had. So it was a little underwhelming because it was just so quick, but it was still cool to try it. And I'm still going to get it for sure. It didn't push me away from the purchase at all. Shortly after, I finally got to play the Wii U version, and there was four of us, and I don't know. It looks fucking amazing. I mean, I know we can see on our computers, you know, and you can, you know, put on your HDTV if you want and see how wonderful it looks. But seeing it in motion is just like, it's golden. It just looks so fucking good, crisp, fluid, fun. The levels really pop. The characters are really great. They even have some old Smash Brothers music from the N64 kind of remixed into some of the...
Oh, yeah, things. I heard some of that, like, during the, like, battle results screen, stuff like that. Yeah.
So that made me fucking excited, and, I'm so excited for it. I can't even explain it. I have verbal diarrhea all over myself right now.
Yeah, that tournament just got me incredibly excited for this game. It really put into perspective just how much of a phenomenon Smash Brothers is and has been for a very long time. Just seeing all those people, you know, cheering on all the players and just having such a great time, you know, with the game just got me just incredibly excited to play it myself.
Yeah, before we even got up to the line where we could see the TV, because it was kind of curled back on itself, My mother was confused out of her mind for all the screaming that was going on during certain matches. And a lot of it was like sudden death mode that would happen. And then people were like, oh, you know, who was going to get hit? That kind of thing. There was a time where a green Mega Man and a blue Mega Man were, you know, and people were like yelling, Mega Man's going to win, you know, because obviously that's going to be the case. But then I tried to explain to her that this is just, people are so into this game in this series. Just to sum up really quick and then we'll move on. My first match, I picked Villager again because even though I wanted to go with someone else, I wanted to play with him in HD. And I actually chose one of his costumes, which was a whole different me character, or Animal Crossing character. They had the female Animal Crossing Villager in there, but they had another one that was kind of like the drugged out Villager that you've seen. So it's cool that the whole palette swap is not just a color scheme, you know, just the hat different. It's the whole character is different. And so that was pretty cool. And I didn't do very well. I got third out of the four of us. And but it was all right. It was still fun. I was getting used to the character. The level, I don't really recall, honestly, what level we played, which is a bummer. But then the second match, I played as Rosalina and Luma, which Rosalina's been a big favorite character of mine since her inception. And I knew she'd be a little bit tricky to use, too, but I figured she'd be at least a bit more normal. And we played... there was some hammers and tingle on the screen. There was a lot of shit going on. It was pretty great. And in the end, I won. So I was pretty proud of that.
Nice.
And in fact, part of it was due to a super hammer, I must admit. But but when I got that, man, people were just like screaming and hollering because I was just chasing everyone around. It was pretty great. And at one point, Little Mac became, he got the Smash Ball. And became, you know, Giga Mac, which I don't think is very impressive personally. But I did a great job of avoiding him the entire time, you know, which maybe not as isn't the Smash Brothers way, but hey, when someone's got that, you don't go and meet him face to face, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I played smart and I played hard, and I'm glad I won at least one of the matches.
You never thought about it. Can Luma pick up the hammer, or is it just Rosalina who can pick it up?
I didn't see anything to indicate that, but I would think maybe just Rosalina would.
Yeah, I would think so too.
But Luma can definitely attack from afar, and that's pretty cool because I'd throw the Luma out and it would start attacking while I could still attack. So I think that'll be a character I'm going to want to develop my skills in.
Yeah, she looks very interesting. I was also going to mention one part of the Smash Brothers during E3 that I thought was pretty amusing. Someone was playing as Little Mac, and after they fully charged their KO meter, I think they were going for Rosalina, but the Luma actually got between the two, and he KO'd the Luma out of the stage. So
weird.
So the Luma adds a really interesting dynamic to the game that I think is really neat.
I wonder if that would happen with a Pikmin, too.
I don't know. That's a good question.
What a way to nerf the KO, you know?
Yeah.
Just throw your little red Pikmin out there. So we can move on from that to the other kind of Smash Brothers related announcement, but Amiibo. They introduced toys. I mean, Skylanders type toys, Disney Infinity type toys. I mean, we all kind of thought this would be coming. Hell, we saw the little figurine in the very first trailer for the Wii U. We just didn't realize if that was going to happen, but. Just to touch upon it briefly, I guess the gist of it is that it's their answer to NFC, what they're going to do with it. It's toys that come to life on your console or handheld, which I did appreciate that. They're going to, you know, it's another peripheral, but it's a little white hockey puck that uses infrared, and it actually will talk to your Amiibo character, and so you don't have to leave your Amiibos at home if you're going, you know, to play some 3DS with friends. And it's going to be compatible with Mario Kart 8, Smash Brothers, both versions, Mario Party 10, Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker, Yoshi's Woolly World. They had, I think, at least 10 characters pictured. The Villager, Pikachu, Donkey Kong, Link, Mario, Wii Fit Trainer, Peach, Samus, Yoshi, and Kirby, I believe. Yoshi was one of my favorite ones to see as far as just design goes. But, you know, this is pretty sweet, I think. I'm still a little hesitant. But the fact that it can talk, the games can talk back to it, and it can learn and it can evolve, is probably what sells me the most on it. It makes me the most hopeful compared to, you know, Skylanders, which I just never gave a crap for. How do you guys feel? Chris? I mean, is this something that...
Yeah.
Is this a good direction for Nintendo?
I don't know. I mean, from the standpoint, you know, of myself, I don't need a bunch of amiibo characters laying around. And it's a little weird when they start talking about, you know, we want you to really identify with your amiibo. Your amiibo is your friend. Your amiibo is your pal. Your amiibo is, you know, cooking breakfast for you the next morning. I mean, it's
amiibo is going to tell you to go to your parents' wallet and download this title. And
yeah, exactly. I mean, so there's an element from the standpoint of, is this something, you know, Chris Wright, video game player, can get excited about? Well, not in a big way. I mean, I will probably buy a couple of these. Like, especially when they release the Kid Icarus line of them, I'm going to be a sucker, and I'm going to go out and get a couple, I'm sure. But from the standpoint of, is it something for me to get excited about? Here's the thing. There's two things about the amiibo that I think, you know, hit in it that kind of bother me. One, they are like little statues rather than what I would classically consider toys. And if they were toys, I think it would be easier for me to get into it, because you like, even with Skylanders, I always wondered, how do these kids play with these things? Because they're just kind of plastic. They're not posable. You can't do much with them, can you? You know, maybe I'm wrong, you know, when I look at when they first showed the little Mario amiibo, there was a part of me that was kind of like, oh, I was hoping they would be more creative with it than that, you know, that it would be.
Where's the flint in his hand so he actually throws fireballs, you know?
Well, not necessarily like that, but, you know, like, I don't know, like something that was posable or something that I could imagine a kid playing with, and then when he's not playing with his video games.
I can't remember what they're called, but in Japan there's a new line of toys. There's a Mario one and there's a Luigi one, and they look so awesome, and they're fully posable figures. I think they're only $20 to $30 each, which may be higher than the price point they're going for with amiibo, but
sure.
You know, they definitely could have gone that route. They maybe were stuck on the whole Smash Brothers gimmick a little bit too much, because they were saying, remember how in the beginning it was, you know, it was supposed to be these little trophies that you could fight, and they came to life. And, you know, it is a little interesting. And plus, like the Link one, you know, you got that little clear stick holding him up because he's not totally attached to the base. And what happens when that breaks? And then it just, all you have is a little weight piece of plastic, you know?
They have a little disc to carry around.
Yeah, that was kind of going to be my second point, that in the case of Skylanders, okay, Spyro existed already, but he's, you know, there's a totally redesigned series, you know, at least to my knowledge. And so they could design the characters around the toys, if that made sense. So, you know, whatever the advantages are to having a little, you know, sort of plastic character that's, I mean, I don't know. When I saw the Skylanders toys, they were kind of bulky characters. So they don't have these little thin legs and things like that because, they're totally designed to be toys in the first place. These Nintendo characters, while they're obviously iconic and I have a great deal of affection for the characters themselves, you know, Link's going to have skinny little legs that can break. You know, you know, that's, you know, what happens when I buy my Kid Icarus, you know, my Pit figure, and the wings break off, you know, because they're, and I'm not saying that they may be built out of titanium. I mean, I don't know. You know, we'll
see. You
just
can't hold it too close to the sun.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. You know, like, so that's the other concern of it, is that we're working backwards now from the video game to the toy, then from the toy to the video game. And I don't know if that's going to affect the quality of the toy. That remains to be seen, but it's a concern I have. So, and then just, you know, in another way, and it's been pointed out on the boards that it's kind of a fancy way to do DLC too, or, you know, characters that you, or, you know, when the Wiimote came out and there was a big deal for a feature that never really got used, which is that you could keep your stats in your Wiimote and carry it to your friend's house.
Yep.
And then, you know, it's kind of the same idea, but see, that alone proves that you don't have to have an amiibo to do this kind of thing. So it's, in a way, it's a toy, yes, but it sort of masks the, I mean, there were other ways to do the advantages to video gaming that amiibos are going to bring. So
that's why the fact that it can talk back to it at least gives me some hope that it's, you know, beyond just an unlocking device. It doesn't just open the door to some code that's already in existence. But at the same time, okay, so my Pikachu will learn moves based on how I fight against it, and Joe's will, you know, learn how he fights against it. But when we bring them together, so we have to let them play against each other and just sit there and watch. Like, they were saying that if you let the amiibos fight themselves, then they grow faster or they grow stronger. Well, that's boring, isn't it?
It may work really well.
Playing video games.
Right. Let them play themselves.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of ambiguity going on still.
Yeah.
They look nice, though.
I sound like I've been very critical. I don't hate the idea. I just have those kind of, when I see it, those are the thoughts that I have. Okay, this is where I could see this go afoul. But,
yeah.
Well, and then just the fact they're kind of coming late to it. You know, I don't know how well Infinity did. You know, I know that Skylanders seemed like it was like a big thing among with kids for about a year, and then Infinity's kind of come along and it's out there, but I haven't heard that it was as successful as Skylanders. So there's also the concern that they may be coming a little late to the party on this thing. But
well, the last thing I want to add then, before throwing it maybe to some other guys here, is at least the quality of the figurine is really nice. If you look at the screenshots, the poses are relatively unique amongst them. The paint job, the models, they all look very, very well done. Even though Link is not even, actually, he's not even touching his base. You know, I don't think Pitt is either. But they still look very nice, and I, for one, have always wanted more figurines. I maybe don't have a place for them. As I get older, it's probably less of a need. But I still like having the occasional, you know, figurine or statue, and it's really hard to get good Nintendo figurines like this. A lot of other, or in Japan at least, they have the market just covered. It's all done. But unless you import stuff, the U.S. doesn't really have a lot of good Nintendo toys, and hasn't for a long time. So at least I see myself maybe buying a couple of my favorite characters just to have. Having that little Animal Crossing villager, you know, maybe a couple inches tall on my desk, whether I use them or not, will make me happy. You know, bring one to work or something. But so that, it's got that going for it. Peter, Joe. You guys have anything you want to add about Amiibos here?
I'll chip in a bit. Like you were saying, I think they look well designed, and just as figurines, they look pretty classy. So I mean, I wouldn't mind owning a couple of them to, you know, just put on a shelf with other video game stuff. That's probably what I'm what I like about these things the most right now. Not so much from a gameplay perspective, but just as figurines. I kind of like that sort of stuff. So, and like you were saying, how many opportunities do we get to have, you know, like a Wii Fit trainer figure, or potentially like a Captain Falcon or a Ness from Earthbound, or
yeah, especially those more obscure characters.
Yeah. So, and I think that's great. Like, it'll be cool to have some of that stuff to just kind of have hanging on your shelves or whatever. And I'll probably get like at least one for each game that Amiibo is compatible with that I own, just to see how it works. For Smash, the idea of, you know, having it develop its own moves and stuff like that is kind of interesting. So I'll want to experiment with that. I'm pretty excited to see what the figures will be like for Mario Kart 8 and what they will do in that game.
Especially for like Pit, you know, will he still have an effect on Mario Kart 8 despite not being a Mario Kart character? That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, stuff like that, and the games that were mentioned. Well, with Smash Brothers, it's you can clearly have characters for each, or Amiibo figures for each character, but Mario Kart's a bit different. I mean, you got tons of different carts, wheels, characters, like all these different varieties, and some games aren't necessarily like have a huge roster of characters. So it'll be interesting to see what kinds of figures Nintendo puts out for these, and what kind of avatars they'll represent for the games. Like for the Toad treasure trackers, will it just be a Captain Toad, or will there, like, what else will they release for that kind of game?
And it's risky too, because yeah, if they have, again, to use the Pit example, if Pit doesn't work with games he's not in, that makes that character less valuable as far as ability than maybe Mario, who might be more well-rounded in a bunch of games. So people are going to want to buy the Mario one because he's going to be more versatile.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't see why they can't do something. Like, maybe you can race as a Pit Me in Mario Kart. Maybe they could do it that way, but I don't know. I'm really surprised at this question. I'm curious to see how it plays out. But continue.
Yeah, that's mostly what I have to say about that. And then what was mentioned at E3, I actually do... there is some truth to that. Like, playing Melee over the years and like Brawl, just seeing those figures, you know, I would look at some of those figures and say, hey, it would be cool to own this. So I think it's a cool idea, as just like a physical physical thing, like I mentioned earlier, and as a unique sort of memory card with possibly unique gameplay possibilities, you know, I'll be there for it. It seems a lot more interesting than I was originally going to anticipate. Like, if it was just to unlock content, like you were saying, that would be kind of disappointing, but as long as they're trying to do stuff with the figures, as far as gameplay goes, then I'll keep trying them out until, and maybe I'll find one that's fun to use.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would be great if, well, actually maybe not so great, if just owning characters would later open up certain packs of DLC just by owning it. So they, you know, Smash Bros. Might release a new stage for each one of the characters, and you'd instantly have it just by using it once. But then again, I mean, unless they offer those anyway for maybe a small fee, it would be kind of a, it would cause an uproar if I couldn't get this unless I bought that stupid figurine, you know. Yeah, I think they're going to fight to prevent that kind of.
I was also wondering how situation. They were going to sell these things. Would it be like a GameStop thing, or could you get them just on Amazon, or would it be a toy store thing, or like where's the market for these figures? Like, where are you going to be able to buy them?
I don't think they've commented on it, but we do know that they're going to be in, like, I don't know, blister packs or just, you know, the same kind of packaging that, you know, a Ninja Turtle toy at Toys R Us will be in. So it's not like it's, I think somebody commented, not even necessarily a negative rule, but they were worried about them being in blind bags. I don't think that the Nintendo would do that.
I
don't think so.
Plus the sheer size, I don't think they would do it. But I mean, I guess they do have the Scribblenauts figurines in blind boxes.
It would really suck if you were trying to like get like a Mario or Link and you got like six Mii fighters in a row or something like that. So I don't think that's
gonna happen. And at the price I expect these to be at, honestly, like I'm thinking 10, 15 bucks.
Yeah.
I thought they released or someone commented and said like the range would be from, I think it was like $8 to $15 or something like that.
A range.
I thought I read that somewhere.
I didn't catch it, but
I could do more Googling.
But either way, yeah, at that price, I mean, you can't be blind bagging anything. That's, again, uproar will occur.
Yep.
An uproar that a robot chicken skit can't fix.
Kid Icarus uproaring.
Oh, jeez. Very nice. Let's jump from this then to... I can't believe we haven't even gotten through like the first couple titles that I wanted to talk about, and we've been here for over an hour. This is going to make this either a long podcast or we're cutting a lot of shit out. But there, believe it or not, there was a game possibly bigger than this one discussed and mentioned at E3 this year. The Legend of Zelda for the Wii U was shown off. We finally got to see it. We got to not necessarily play it or anything, but we got to hear about it. We got to kind of see the direction they're going in. And holy crap, guys. I mean, I'm excited. I've said for a long time, and I know I'm not alone in this. I'm not the first person to say it, but I've always wanted a Zelda where I could walk into the Lost Woods and literally get lost. Like, I go into it between any pair of trees and just, you know, find a river and follow the river because, hey, that makes sense. Let's go see where the source is. And then it leads to a temple or something. And then I could leave the woods in any direction. And that, I mean, I guess that's like Skyrim. I've never played it. I've never played any games like that, being a Nintendo gamer. And I'm just psyched that Zelda is going to be the franchise to do it on the Nintendo system. And then to see it in the graphical style of pretty much Skyward Sword, but better, was just the icing on the cake for me. Because I think that it looked beautiful when it was in Skyward Sword. And I think that it's actually not even the same thing here. I think they've almost made it a little more realistic, while like somewhere between Skyward Sword and Twilight Princess, with a dash of Wind Waker. I don't know. I can't even tell anymore. It looks beautiful, you know, in HD, and the whole idea around it. Everything that Aonuma was saying about going back to its roots and being able to do things in certain orders that you kind of create yourself, or making the overworld itself the challenge, as opposed to just a conduit to the next temple or the next challenge. And based on a link between worlds, you know, they kind of were working towards that as far as diversifying the temples and everything and the orders. So it seems like an evolution of all this, and I couldn't be more psyched.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on that. You know, Anand has that pet theory that there's like people value different things in Zelda. And I don't know if he's right about that, but you know, that some people value the exploration a bit more than the sort of dungeon crawling, and other people like the dungeons. I definitely would consider myself more on the exploration side. My favorite Zeldas are Wind Waker and the original Zelda, and this looks like a step in that direction. But then it obviously it's its own thing too, you know, but where you're going to have this awesome overworld that you get to explore. And to me, that's the kind of Zelda I want. So I just kind of, it's hard to get super excited about it, despite the fact that all the news is fantastic, just simply because we know, you know, it's still just such a hint of what it is and not enough to really, you know, sink our teeth into yet.
Yeah.
So everything we've seen looks awesome, but and it's Zelda. They're not going to, you know, even the Zelda games I have less affection for, there's not really a Zelda game I can think of that's just a screwball and terrible. Not even Adventure of Link, you know. So they're not going to screw it up, but it looks like it's going the right way. But I guess this is going to be the big game next year at E3. This is the one next year when we have this conversation. It's going to be, you know, we're really going to be able to talk about it, I think. But
yeah, and which they've promised a 2015 release, which, you know, yeah, of course could change. But I could see it totally being a lead title at next year's E3, a big blowout happening, and then, you know, it being a holiday title, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They've, you know, Aonuma mentioned that the footage we saw was not, it was not like a made-up cinematic. It was an in-game footage, but it wasn't necessarily from the player's perspective either, you know, so it probably was using real-time assets and real-time lighting and all that, but done so in a cinematic trailer way. So how it's going to actually look might even change. But clearly Nintendo has a lot of power in the Wii U, believe it or not, people, and it looks like they can do some really cool things, especially with this graphical style. I think they'll be able to get away with more doing it this way than if they were trying to just copy Skyrim and make it Twilight Princess-like.
Which is cool with me. I mean, I'm kind of, you know, like I said, big fan of Wind Waker, big fan of Skyward Sword. So to me, that's the right style to go with Zelda. And it also will keep them from, I mean, there's some concern, I guess, that it'll come off as Skyrim Lite or something. But I think even just the look of the game keeps it from being too easy to compare to something like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely look cool. I'm definitely a thumbs up for me.
Anyone else?
You know, I was left speechless by that trailer, and that's kind of how I still feel. Like when I think about it, I don't know what to say that hasn't already been said or hasn't been said better. It just looks like a phenomenal direction for the series, and I'm really excited to explore the world that they have in mind for it. And it'll probably be a fantastic game. Can't wait for it.
Maybe ask the man himself. Was that an Octorok he was fighting there? What was that?
True.
And it kind of resembled almost a lever, you know. Yeah. And even though the levers are flight enemies, it had the same kind of
cone shape.
It comes out of the ground. It has these arms that maybe don't spin, but you know they run and they crawl or whatever. It'll be interesting to see where this takes place in the timeline, which I know is not canon technically in like anyone's mind, but they definitely aim to put things certain places. They try to build on their world as best they can without actually being too definitive. But I totally can see it as being an early area. I mean, the things that the game trailer guys or the game explain guys, I should say, were talking about in their video. You know, a lot of it's just pure speculation, of course, but mentioning that because Link was without, you know, the green tunic, that this could be just an early area and kind of the shake up the beginning. I don't doubt that because they're not going to show us anything, you know, later in the game anyway. They probably don't have it.
To that point, I'm just hoping that I kind of hope this every time we see the pre-tunic Link, but I always want to see more time spent on that. Like I always want to see more time, you know, before he's like the superhero. Do you know what I mean? Like, because I feel like that's the opportunity. Like, you know, once he puts on the tunic, it's going to be, I don't want to say formulaic, but then there's like certain boxes that kind of have to be checked for like what's going to happen. But the time when they can really do some interesting things and like distinguish this presentation of Link from other ones is before that. So I'm hoping that we get to see some more of that. And I also, like, I don't know if it was the Game Explain guys that maybe they just touched on it, but there's the whole thing with the ponytail, and they were saying how, like, that trailer we saw, like, really lines up well with some scenes from Princess Mononoke.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, it's been a long time since I saw that movie, but they said that, like, shortly after the character, like, cuts off their ponytail, cuts off the top bob or something on their hair. So I'm wondering if they're hinting at some kind of, like, I don't know, that something might, like, fall from grace or something with this character. But that's what really is intriguing me from this trailer, is that aspect. What happens pre-Tunic with Link, and then also the whole thing with the arrow that he's using. So, like, is this a hint that certain enemies will require, like, this limited number use weapons to defeat, as opposed to just you can hack at them with whatever you have on hand? So. And now my wife has come in the room, and now she's flailing about as if she has a sword because I mentioned hacking. I think anyway. So I'm wondering if this is a hint at some new integral mechanic to the game, that you have to have these certain weapons that will do these specific things that take out specific enemies, and how central that will be to the actual gameplay.
And then to add to that is, how does that relate to the gamepad? Because we have no link of how this actually, well, no pun intended, we have no link to understanding how this is played.
I think that's what I'm curious the most about right now. Skyward Sword isn't my favorite game in the series, but it's probably my favorite to play from like a mechanical gameplay perspective. Like, I really like the controls and stuff like that. It, seeing as how the Wii U has the ability to connect to a Wii remote, do you think that they'll continue to use motion controls to some extent, or will the gamepad be the star of the game, or will there be more a traditional control option? Or there's a whole lot of possibilities and potential for the controls and the gameplay. And coming after, at least from a console lineup, Skyward Sword, I think there's a lot to live up to, because that game played incredibly well.
Yeah.
I'm hoping so. I mean, unless they really present some sort of gamepad use that's pretty novel and everything, I'd be happy to go back with some motion control for now.
Yeah. I mean, they've kind of already done gamepad, obviously, on the two DS Zeldas. So, I don't know. I mean, is anyone really dying for that again as far as a control option? I can't really think of creative ways to do it that haven't already been done in Phantom Hourglass, you know what I mean? So, I'm not really dying for that.
Sorry, continue.
No. I think we're on the same page. Go with it, Joe.
Oh, I was just saying, I would hope that the gamepad, I'm sure it's going to be integral in some way. They're going to try to continue, you know, to prove the value of this device.
Right.
I'm just hoping that it's more, of like an augmentation of doing the things that you would usually do in a Zelda game, but easier, faster, you know. Yeah. Or more fun if possible. But
Tingle Tuner 2, I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's really. What they
gotta do. Bring it back.
The Wind Waker HD had some pretty decent use of the gamepad, and I thought just having that map available was nice. And I kind of like the gyro controls. Is that what they're called, for like motion and stuff like that?
Tilting somehow.
Yeah, just the tilting stuff. Like, I liked that for aiming and things like that. And taking that to the next level is something I'd be interested in. Depending on the items, For Skyward Sword, they had an item that seemed really tailored around the Wii remote, in that beetle item.
The beetle.
Yeah,
best exactly. Item ever.
It's great. So I don't know, if we get like one or two like items or more designed around the gamepad, I think that would be exciting. Like, I still really like the gamepad, like I mentioned before, and I'd like to see it used creatively in this Zelda game.
I can get behind that.
And that's really all we can say at this point. There's nothing less left to show. There's nothing less left to discuss. We have to wait until they unveil something else. So I guess we can move forward if that's all right.
Let's do it.
Let's jump to what actually really got me hyped, because my lovely girlfriend has always wanted a game starring good old Toad, and we got one. And even though some might think that it's just a kind of a like a level pack for something that was in another game, Captain Toad Treasure Tracker is, you know, full-blown game with, it looks like probably like maybe 8 worlds with X amount of levels per. They all have their different themes, but they're all based around that mini game from Super Mario 3D World. But it looks like they're really fleshing the hell out of it. I don't know if he can use items. I didn't catch that. But I know, and he still can't jump and everything. But just as far as the what they're doing to this, it looks like it's going to be tons of fun. And it's even going to be a retail release too, so not some DLC or downloadable game. I mean, they're giving it the whole hog, you know?
Yep.
And Toad, I think it's smart because I think Toad is a character, while very cute and adorable, may not have the unique personality to hold his own game, but Captain Toad, you know, who's kind of an Indiana Jones of the Toad world, totally has enough gusto to carry a game, and so I'm just so excited. And this is a holiday 2014 title, so I'm more than psyched, and I will be buying this day one for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think it looks pretty cool. I kind of had that debate. Maybe we could have it right now. Is Captain Toad the original Toad? Did he get his captain's license?
Legitimate Toad. Well, you don't know.
Nice callback. Yeah. Well, considering he picks up, you know, turnips in the same way that he has in the past.
Yeah, I saw that. That was cool.
Yeah, I would not doubt if he's the same Toad. I'm going to consider him the same Toad.
He just got a promotion at some point. Yeah, made him captain.
He said Peach. Yeah, he are got you kidding his stripes. Me? I don't do shit. You after Peach held him out in front of her to block items, he's like, F this. This is horrible. You know, in Smash Brothers, I think it was Melee that move started. But he's just said, yeah, this is BS. I'm going to go, you know, do something else. And then he probably fell down a hill, found a gem, and was like, oh, this is fun. And now that's what he does, you know.
And that will be the opening cutscene for the game.
I hope so. That'd be cool.
This is bullshit. Okay.
There's so many different ways they could banish him from his normal life, but I don't know. Maybe he'll cut off his mushroom tail, you know, and just tie it back, just like Link, and go off and do his thing. It'll be that's the true Princess Mononoke reference.
That's awesome. But here's the thing about Toad. Like, Toad is one of the iconic characters of Mario. Everybody who was a kid, when we were kids, you know, you knew Mario, Luigi, Peach, and Toad. And in a way, Toad has gotten the short shrift over the last 20 years or so. There haven't been a lot of games with him, you know, apart from like popping up in Mario Kart and stuff. You know, there hasn't been a lot of face time.
Or he's been one of many Toads, you know.
Yeah. And so I kind of feel like it might be more marketable than you would think, because it is, you know, Toad's a character everybody knows and kind of loves. And the gameplay of those little sections was pretty fun. And I'm kind of with you. What they showed us looks a lot more like a lot more fleshed out than what we got in 3D World. If it was just of the level of the gameplay in 3D World, I think I'd probably pass on it, because I like those levels, but I like them as a kind of just change of pace within 3D World. But as a full game, it looks like they're kind of taking the idea and really focusing on it, because there were some things, like you mentioned, like we saw him pulling out the turnips and throwing them again. I mean, that's a callback. We don't see that often in Mario games. Yeah. You know, it seems they're really thinking about what to do within this sort of limited format to keep it interesting. So,
to name a few things that we saw in the trailer, he has a pickaxe power up for beating, you know, bricks up, breaking bricks. There's even some, I don't know if, I think this is in the trailer. There's first person gameplay for shooting on rails in some levels. There's boss battles where you have to do creative dodging to climb up a tall tower, fighting a dragon. And, they're really turning the cogs in their heads of how to utilize this in every possible way.
Yeah, that shot of Toad hanging out on top of the dragon's head, looking all nervous, like that was a great moment too. I thought that says a lot about Toad, you know, like, mm-hmm. as a character, this little bitty guy, almost like Piglet, you know, like up there.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, actually.
Yeah, so it's nice. I mean, there's a lot of potential there. It's just the only question I have is just how deep does that gameplay go if it's going to be a full retail release? If you told me right now. Yeah, DLC pack, $20, or, you know, something like that. Get 50 little Toad levels. I'd go like, yeah, you know, that makes sense to me. But a full retail release, that makes me think they've got a bigger vision for it. And so I'm kind of excited to see what that's going to be.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps a story, you know, something to kind of go along with it. Yeah. Like, and I'm kind of excited to see what Toad's been up to, you know. I mean, you know, you're mentioning how long we've known of Toad. Toad was, you saw Toad before you saw Peach. Mm-hmm. In the first Mario game, and he was a playable character in the second ever Mario game. So, you know, Toad has been around longer than we've really maybe given him credit or given him thought.
Yeah.
And so one last thing I want to add about as far as what they're doing with gameplay, in each level you're supposed to pick up 3 gems and 1 star to kind of finish it off, and that kind of reminds me of maybe some of the collecting in... what was that? Wario Land Shake It or Kirby's Epic Yarn. You know, different collectathon puzzlers, you could say. So I think there's a gameplay need out there for a game like this. I think there's a franchise need in terms of people's interest and people's desires. And it's fresh. It's not Mario. I mean, I guess they could have done it with Mario, but they maybe like a little wind-up toy like Mario versus Donkey Kong. But, you know, Toad is a great character to use as... for this kind of gameplay. So,
yeah, I mean, it's basically a new IP. I mean, if, you know, yes, it's sort of based on 3D World, and yes, Captain Toad's been in a couple other games, but at least as a gameplay style, it's you know, is a new idea. It's not something we've done 1,000 times. So,
yep.
And playing Super Mario 3D World, anytime I unlocked a world, the first thing I would do is try to look for a Captain Toad stage. I definitely am excited to play more of these kinds of things. They just look, I like how they are so tightly designed, just like around a very small environment, and how you can like rotate around. It almost reminds me of like a board game or a model or something. And just seeing like all the things move around in like a set path, or like seeing how everything is interacting with each other. And I don't know, there's something like almost tangible about it that I find really interesting and fun to explore. Just a small thing. I find it funny how it doesn't seem like Captain Toad can't jump. It's just his backpack seems so heavy that he can't seem to get any air. I just think that's a cute way of working around the no-jump mechanic. And seeing how the Mario's, you know, about jumping and platforming, having a game designed around, you know, being grounded, like a Mario's, somewhat of a Mario game by the Mario developers, just so many cool gameplay possibilities there, and it looks really fun.
Yeah, you know, in that bag, there might be a lot of tools and a lot of items to use, you know. Gives them a chance to kind of give them an arsenal and make that make logical sense, too. So, well, let's jump from one new IP to another new IP. In fact, let's squid jump into this with Splatoon, which was pretty much the big shock, I think, of the show. Let's see, you have Hisashi Nogami, Yusuke Amano, and Tsubasa Sakaguchi. These three guys, along with, you know, a big team, I think it's a pretty big team, are developing what, pardon my maybe lack of ability to describe it correctly, but it looks like a paintball-esque first-person or third-person shooter multiplayer online game, action game. I don't know. Where you're shooting ink, and in almost a Mario Sunshine style, you're kind of doing what Mario was trying to clean up, you know? Maybe Mario, that'd be cool if Mario played a little cameo role or some kind, which would probably never happen, but it seems like Nintendo's answer to competitive shooting action games. And, I mean, some other details about it were, you know, having a splatter map on the gamepad that constantly updates to tell you, you know, how you're doing or how the map is looking, being able to swim as a squid through your own ink to be really fast, or even shoot a wall, cover it with your ink, and then swim up it. It's pretty cool gameplay-wise. Being slowed down on your enemy's ink is obviously something almost borrowed from the Mario Chase from Nintendo Land. The game overall almost feels like a Mario Party minigame, because I swear we've gotten something like this before. Like, there's that stamp minigame where you try to cover the white page with your stamp color and try to cover your, you know, your enemy's colors, and it all seems pretty frantic and hectic. And if they can nail the online stability, then this could be just a whole, this could launch a whole new multiplayer experience for Nintendo fans. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that was probably the game I was most excited for. You know, when it first came on, it was like, what am I seeing here? But then the more they revealed of it, the more excited I got. One of my favorite games of the last few years is Team Fortress 2. And that's a game, it's a first-person shooter, but it's not about just, you know, yet again, one more round in the deathmatch Thunderdome. You know, it is a game where you have certain objectives and you've got to accomplish them. And here the objective is obviously painting the scenery as much as possible. And I really liked it. It almost feels like Nintendo's moving into this area, you know, so the shooter genre is the one genre they've barely touched. I mean, apart from if you count GoldenEye, you know, it's the most popular genre by far in the West, and they've never really done anything there. And now they're kind of moving into that area, and it makes me happy to see that they're not focusing on stuff that's already been done a lot. It's much more, the objectives are more obscure. And it really fires my imagination on the ways that you know, that this could be implemented by the time we get it, you know, like how many different items are there going to be, you know, how do the levels affect the way the game is played, you know, like it already, the creativity that they've already demonstrated with, you know, moving faster in your own ink or being able to launch yourself out to where one of your cohorts is in the map, like the level of strategic thinking that you can use or planning that you can use with those kinds of mechanics are it's not quite something I've seen before, apart from maybe a little bit in Team Fortress. So I'm hoping that they kind of go in that direction and really develop not just the strategy, but the different the different ways to play, you know, the different weapons, different items, things like that. So,
and like Smash Brothers, the ink seems like it's going to make it so that like each match feels really different. I'm expecting a lot of variety from match to match, just based on how people are shooting their ink all over the place. Then the mechanic just looks like it offers so much to the genre, as far as mobility, attack, you know, like all that kind of cool stuff. And seeing Nintendo take this genre on in such a different way, it's just it's really cool. Like it's another one of those moments where you see Nintendo do something different with an established idea that just thinks, wow, this is Nintendo, this is what they do, and it's incredible. Yeah, Splatoon is probably like my favorite. Oh, go on, sorry.
I was going to say, because you brought up Smash Brothers, you know, by the time Smash Brothers came along, fighting games had been around forever, you know, and copycats of the Street Fighter II franchise had come and gone, and pretty much the genre for me was just kind of getting tired. And that's kind of where we are with shooters for me, you know, and now Splatoon is coming out and being kind of taking what we already know about the genre and doing it in a very different way. And so I think that's a good call out, a good connection to make between the two.
I just, you know, I'll close out by saying it was probably one of my favorite games at the show, and I'm really looking forward to playing it.
I like it was a whole new IP as well, you know, like something we've never seen before. It wasn't just, you know, Mario Paint 2 or whatever, you know, it was, or yeah, Sunshine, right. Sunshine Inverse or whatever, you know, it was something completely different. You know, the moment that little squid girl popped out or whatever, I was like, what are we looking at here? You know?
Yeah. That was the thing that one of the developers mentioned was, you know, they were talking about how, you know, at Nintendo, how they like to make the the game mechanics first, and then think about, you know, well, what characters will fit into this. And they said it, you know, could have easily wound up as some sort of Mario paintball thing. But then once they decided, like, okay, you know, you're going to fast travel through your own ink and, you know, have all these other mechanics, that they really decided, like, you know, this needs its own new character. Like, this really dictates who should be participating in this. And then you get, as a result, this, like, really novel, creative, but totally, I don't know if makes sense is the right word for characters that have, like, squid hair, but it does. It just, it all fits together. You know, it all feels like, yes, I totally can buy into this.
Yeah. It's quirky in the way, you know, a girl in a robot suit who turns into a ball is quirky. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's sort of, it fits the Nintendo way of doing things with their characters. So,
and it,
welcome
the demos,
Splatoon Squids.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, mention, it seems like the demo implied that the characters will be customizable to some extent with, like, glasses or shirts or whatever. And that kind of seems like how we give Animal Crossing characters, you know, personality and stuff like that. And I think that's kind of neat too.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot to still see. You know, they showed us quite a bit, but I think seeing how this really evolves, seeing what special moves exist, how it's going to stay fresh after multiple playings, different modes that might exist, I think that'll really tell us a lot about the game as we, you know, get closer to its release, which won't be till 2015. But I think it was a great reveal and a great start.
Mm-hmm. This is a younger team too, isn't it? Like, I didn't recognize those guys. Are they guys who've been around a long time? And I just,
well, they hang out at the local aquarium a lot. But, no, yeah, I haven't really recognized the names or anything either. But they did look, and at least the voiceover sounded younger. Yeah. Whoever did that.
Yeah, I think that there's potential to think of these guys as some who might, you know, we might be looking at the future direction of Nintendo, possibly, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I'm happy to see that. You know, it's cool to see.
Yeah. So, you know, let's not dilly dally. We have so many more things we're going to talk about, but we're going to probably have to speed things up a little bit. So that said, let's put a short break in here, and then when we come back, we'll kind of at a faster pace, we'll touch upon a lot of the other things that were talked about, because this was, believe it or not, just a small subset of what E3 brought for us. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back shortly. We have, geez, at least 10 more things we want to get to. So we're going to kind of go at a swifter pace. I think there's less to say, perhaps, whether it's interest-related or just information-related, especially with a few of these. So that said, let's just jump right in. Bayonetta 2. You know, they've been showing that a lot over the year, at least. And, you know, it was no surprise to see it here again. Some of the things that they did showcase were the new costumes, the Nintendo-related costumes that are going to be, I think, was that just in Bayonetta 1?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems.
Yeah, that's what it looked
okay.
like.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't get that from the actual direct, but or the presentation, but I read that later, so. Okay, so, I mean, that's, I guess, a cool way to spice up the one, the first game, but it's cool that they're going to include that as a pack-in anyway, or a download or whatever, just a code. It's, I think that was a key thing that they needed to do to get people hooked on this Bayonetta thing, because so many Nintendo fans probably have never played it, and to be able to get the first part of the story is just very important. And it's like at 60 frames per second, so it's a little bit refurbished, more or less. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a really smart move.
Yeah, yeah. I was never, you know, these games didn't interest me. you know, really at all.
Yeah, me either. Yeah.
Especially, you know, just the content. You kind of know what you're getting into, that it's not really going to be like a high concept narrative or characters or anything like that. But there was a 0% chance that I was going to play it if I didn't have access to the first game. You know, that's just not how I like to experience franchises. So during the week, the fact that they at least put that on the table, that okay, if you get two, you'll get one, that at least like opened the door. That at least made it possible, and I was just really glad to see a third party finally kind of understand that. Yeah, you know, like Mass Effect 3 comes out on a Nintendo platform. You know, Assassin's Creed 3 and 4 comes out on a Nintendo platform. But, you know, it's just not really the same unless you kind of get those starting points. So that was good. That was big.
And again, to have them refurbished a little bit, so they're at 60 frames per second. I don't know if they're going to touch upon the graphics at all, but the first Bayonetta is going to have the same touchscreen and stylus controls as Bayonetta 2. You can also play both games on your gamepad without a TV. There's going to be subtitles in either English or Japanese with a Japanese language option. So they're definitely trying to make it compelling to play through both, and not just to have it, but to actually play through them both and get the whole thing. I mean, maybe to set up, hopefully, a Bayonetta 3. You know, I mean, they want to make this successful.
I would be so surprised if this actually sells well enough, but that would be cool. But you know, what I really liked was not only did they put in things like the new costumes, but they really seemed to be going the extra mile. Where like, I don't know if you guys were watching during the Treehouse stuff, but so I guess in Bayonetta 1, there's like these moves where she will summon like, you know, parts of a demon like that will punch through a portal, right? So like this huge fist will come through. And instead of just being a demon when you are wearing the Peach outfit, it will be Bowser's fist that comes through, and it will be Bowser's foot that comes in and kicks. And they were showing how, like, you know, like she'll play totally different when you're using like Samus's arm cannon, things like that. So just really the extra mile that you don't necessarily expect in a situation like this was pretty darn impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, nothing else to add to that, I guess. We can jump into another game that mixes Nintendo franchises with something else, perhaps in a more significant way for Nintendo fans, Hyrule Warriors.
Yep.
I've been really kind of mixed on this, because I mean, there's so much Zelda in this that I feel compelled to want it, but I don't know anything about, what is it, the Dynasty Warriors game? Series, and the gameplay that's involved there, I've heard it's not even that great per se, but then again, to see Link battling these armies of enemies is something that you don't necessarily get in the Zelda franchise, and it looks really great, and you can play as all these different characters, Midna, Link, Impa, and Zelda. Impa looks like a total badass.
Yeah, she looks awesome.
I mean, if I was to get this game, I feel like based on the roster right now, I'd want to play as her more than anyone else, and
When they announced, or not announced, but when they showed some of the footage, my wife and I were watching, and in unison we both said, "I call Impa." So.
Well, and she's always kind of been a really kind of a badass character. Even when she was, you know, she's been older, she's still been so wise. It's almost like, you know, you just know that she's been around the block, and that she's had her share of battles and troubles to deal with, and so she's really represented in a cool way here. In a way that maybe past Zelda games have not been cohesive to allow. And that's one of the exciting things about this game. To me, the notes I wrote down were big ideas, big graphics, big action, and big fun. The last one, I guess, is, you know, still up in the air for me, but it just looks like that's what is coming with this.
Yeah. You know, I haven't played a Dynasty Warriors game in a very long time, but they seem kind of like... Would you guys agree, or at least getting a look at it, it's almost like, here's a, you know, what a brawler, like the old 2D brawlers are like, this is what it looks like in 3D. You're just running around, mowing down lots of enemies, button mashing, big, stupid fun, but, you know, that's the appeal. The appeal is just run through, the same appeal that we had for Final Fight. Maybe that's what these Dynasty Warriors games are all about. And I can get into that idea on some level, because at that point it's just kind of about the fun of getting to play with Impa, getting to play in a way. You know, Zelda games are such big productions, and there's certain Joe mentioned earlier, there's certain beats you're expecting, or certainly a level of quality. There's not a lot of rough and tumble, I guess, in Zelda. You know, like like with Mario, you're going to get games where maybe Mario, you're going to get a game like Wario Land Shake It, where it's just kind of, this is messy and fun, and, Wario picks his nose and cheap thrills, and you don't really get that kind of thing out of the Zelda series very often. And so maybe this is a chance to kind of let your hair down and just have fun with some of these characters. I don't know.
Well, it looks I got my chocolate Legend of Zelda Battle Quest, and then my Dynasty Warriors, peanut butter, and they mixed them together, and now I have a Hyrule Warriors peanut butter cup, and it could be one of the most delicious things I eat this year,
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of looks like an HD version of that, like a fully realized, hardcore Battle Quest.
Yeah, I can
think
see that.
What typically is the problem with Dynasty Warriors? I think that the 3D brawler that's a good analogy. The part where that fun didn't necessarily translate in Dynasty Warriors is that, you have these just waves of enemies, and at some point, what starts to be a problem is that point where you just feel like you're just hacking and slashing in this, sea of monotony, and it's like you're not even fighting enemies so much as you're just like almost like fighting that punching bag when you were waiting in Brawl. It's just like it's just a thing that you're there to attack. And what I think is, and that was a concern, but in watching the demos this week and stuff, I didn't get that. I felt like the way that this gameplay was set up was such that you could just kind of like blaze through. You could sit and fight, but it would be with a purpose. So it was like you would have to go to a certain part of the map to achieve some objective, defend something or take out an enemy captain. But that was the reason for doing that fighting, as opposed to just slogging through wave after wave of bad guys, lulling yourself into this, monotonous sleep, So, so that was, that was promising to see. And then not only that, but they also add this layer on top of it where they're just, as you said, letting their hair down with the Zelda lore, just like going nuts with it. We saw that thing where you, I think it was a great fairy who like launches this super duper hookshot and then like pulls down the moon into another.
Yeah.
I mean, so that kind of stuff, to have those kind of pieces sprinkled throughout, says that no matter how potentially monotonous the battles might get, I think there's going to be always these little pieces to keep you interested. And that's a big improvement from what was the Dynasty Warriors formula.
I mean, this is going to come out September 26th of this year, so a week before Smash Bros. On 3DS. And I don't know. More is going to be coming out about it as we near, so we can probably move on. Peter, is there anything you wanted to add about it, or are you good?
Real quick, I'll just say I feel similarly with Joe in that just having a huge wave of enemies and having them not be much of a threat is a little disappointing, and that's probably why I'm kind of cautiously interested in this game. In action games, I like to have one enemy feel really intimidating. Like, I like to have even just like a handful of enemies like pose a huge threat. When you have like an entire army and none of them really seem to be capable of taking you out on their own, like you almost seem too powerful. It just doesn't seem as fun to me. So I'll just take the wait and see approach.
All right. I think I'm kind of, that's where I'm at too, because I don't know. Maybe I should look into this, watch the videos, read more about it. Cause just from what I've seen, I'm still not totally sold, but it seemed like a good concept. Moving on, also a great concept that's finally become realized is Yoshi's Woolly World. And, you were talking about this, Chris, in the very beginning of, in the presentation part of the podcast, and how they kind of showed us the game while inside a yarn shop or at a with a wall of yarn where they're picking out the textures and everything. And you can really tell that since we last saw this game over a year ago, that they've put a lot of effort into the textures and into the world that Yoshi exists in, and that they really set out not to make a sequel to Irby's Epic Yarn, but to make a similar style game that is still a true Yoshi game at heart. I mean, there's mention of it being a very challenging game with a lot of secrets. You know, you can actually take damage, and enemies can hurt you significantly, and you know, that gave me a lot of hope, because the one thing that kind of turned me off from Epic Yarn in the first place was the lack of that kind of risk. So, I mean, there wasn't too much, I guess, said, but I've never wanted more to crochet than now. especially if I could make my own Yoshi doll, which they look so cool. I would honestly buy one in a second if they were selling them. But maybe I can commission someone's grandmother to do that. But I mean, are you guys going to pick this game up based on what you've seen so far? Or?
Oh, definitely.
I think so. I actually watched E3 this presentation with my wife this year, and this is the first time she's actually sat in and watched E3 with me. And you know, we kind of sat and watched through it. And when we were done, we were kind of talking about it, and I was talking about how excited I was for Splatoon and you know, Smash Brothers and stuff. And then I was like, "Well, what interested you?" And she said, "That Yoshi game." And for her, this was like the big game, was the Yoshi game. And I think there's something to the presentation. There's something to Yoshi the character that's just – it's. I think it's even appealing in a way that maybe as Nintendo fans we can take for granted sometimes, you know, like just how cute he is. And I mean, the amount of care and love that seems to be put in this game is pretty – it looks pretty good, you know. So – I was kind of surprised by that, but pleasantly surprised, because to me, I guess I always sort of contextualized this game as kind of just being, okay, you know, good feels doing another Epic Yarn, you know, and with Yoshi this time. Okay. You know, that's about as much thought as I put into it, but she got really kind of had her imagination fired by it. So that kind of made me more excited about it than I was before. What's one other point? Well, yeah. So, I mean, so it looks like a pretty cool game. It looks like a pretty cute game. So, yeah, I think there was kind of a feeling that it might vaporware, that it might disappear. I was glad to see that it came roaring back and, you know, looked compelling. So, I guess the other thing I was going to say is the one concern I have about it is that now that I've played Little Big Planet, you know, a lot of that cool, like, homemade look that they talked about, I love that. I think it looks fantastic, and they're doing it in their own way. But I do kind of feel like I've seen some of this before in Little Big Planet, and I hope that isn't an albatross around the neck of the game, because it's obviously been made with love. So,
as where I'm not sure if I will ever get the 3DS version of the Yoshi games, the new one that just came out, I didn't pick it up a few months ago, and I'm just not sure when I would. It didn't even get that many kind of glowing reviews. It's kind of a mixed thing, so I don't know if I'll ever touch that. But this one, for some reason, touches me differently. I think I'm way more confident about picking this up in the future than I ever was for the 3DS version.
You know, I think it looks really good. Wario Land Shake It on the Wii is one of my favorite games on the platform and in general, and that's Good Feel, and I have a good feeling that Good Feel has something cool being sewn together here. Sorry for all those puns, but...
Wow. that was a lot.
Wait, I didn't say that?
Yeah, kind of like what Christopher was saying, when it was first announced, it just looked like Kirby's Epic Yarn, you know, with Yoshi, and that seemed kind of neat, but its reintroduction at this E3 really gave it an identity of its own. It really looks like a Yoshi game now, but with a really, really cool-looking aesthetic, and yeah, I just really like what they showed off, and I'm looking forward to playing this one as well.
Yeah, this is this might sound completely unbelievable. This is probably going to be the first Yoshi game that I buy or own, wow, which is kind of crazy. I mean, yeah. So I've just never really been that into Yoshi. But this game just looks so good and looks so fun. And one of the things that was so neat to see And something that's impressed me about Nintendo, maybe in the last half year, maybe year, is when we get these sort of developer glimpses, they've really been very candid about like ideas they had or limitations, you know, things that didn't really work out. And you know, this week we actually saw they not only talked about the various incarnations of this game, but they actually showed us, you know, the still images of how this game looked in development at different stages, where, you know, at first Yoshi was just like the yarn outline the way they did for Kirby. And so seeing that, you know, just got this appreciation for the game. The gameplay looks really fun. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting to totally dive in on my first Yoshi game.
So you never even played the original Yoshi's Island?
No. Nope, I was a Sega Genesis kid, so I didn't even have a Super Nintendo.
Oh,
of course,
man.
I wanted one, but you know, in those days, you had to pick. So
yeah, I can't believe it. You liked Sega? That's how disappointing.
I know. I was one of those kids.
I'm actually gonna side with Joe here. I was actually a Genesis kid first. That was the first game system I started playing. Yeah.
You guys all, I'm hanging out with Sega fans? That's so...
Yeah, Peter, my hand's raised too. I had a Genesis well before Super Nintendo.
Oh no.
What?
I had a Super Nintendo after an N64.
The plot of yeah. Sega kids to infiltrate the Nintendo podcast.
You guys do know that I didn't have an SNES until about 2001 either. I was also a Sega Genesis kid. So what's happening here?
This is the part where the podcast is going to become about Sega games.
Yeah. What I was going to, at the very beginning of the podcast, I forgot to do it. I was going to say, what a show Sega had. Did you see Sonic Boom? Wow. You know.
Yeah, really.
Well, you know, when I cut out the discussion, I was going to ask about the Sonic movie that's going to be coming out.
What is that?
You guys hear about
that? I don't know anything about it.
The little bit that I read implied, and I probably have my facts all weird, but I thought they said that it was announced that there was going to be a Sonic the Hedgehog movie, which was going to be part live action and part CGI. So like Garfield.
That's what I heard. Yep. Well, they said by the guys who made the Smurfs. So that's one hell of a pedigree.
So
there.
Neil Patrick Harris and Sonic the Hedgehog together.
Hank Azaria, yeah. Hey, because they're as Robotnik.
But you know what?
If like real Jaleel White, and then he'll meet himself.
That would sell me the ticket right there.
I don't mean to get off on that. Did you guys see that like homemade Sonic trailer or whatever that was made like a year or two ago?
No.
Like it's pretty trippy that Sonic fans, man. Weird nuts. They got Jaleel White to do the voice and everything on this thing.
Oh,
you
really?
Have to look for it. Yeah, it's homemade, and it's one of those that looks really good for a homemade trailer, but it's bizarre. So yeah. Anyway, Sonic Boom, real quick, and I know nobody wants to talk about it, but I see the trailer on it, and it's crazy. It's like the new game with Sonic. Here's Sonic, and it's like, oh, he looks pretty cool. And here's Knuckles, and oh, not the best, but okay, cool. And Tails is in the game, awesome. And here's Amy. Here she comes with the hammer, and it's like, all right, Sonic. Maybe they, you know, Sonic team's got their act together, and it's like. And introducing Styx, some fat-faced hedgehog-looking piece of shit with a boomerang. And I'm like, oh, Sega, you are so close. You are so close to making a game with characters with a character I didn't hate in it. But, well. Okay, well, sorry. You can cut all that shit out.
Big the Cat DLC.
Yeah, really.
Amiibo. Can we get a Big the Cat Amiibo?
Oh, man.
Oh man. Okay, so you know what? Let's jump ship worse than we already have. Let's move on to let's move on to this game, which was pretty much it was kind of spoiled before the show, but people really wanted to see something about this, and we did, but I'm not convinced we saw very much, and maybe I just missed the coverage, so you guys got to fill me in. Star Fox. Miyamoto is working on another Star Fox. And all I know, or all I understand about it, is that it's going to, of course, be HD, be on the Wii U, use motion controls, and the gamepad is going to be inside the cockpit, you know, from, like, Fox's perspective, while the TV would be the traditional Star Fox perspective we know. Tell me more.
I think you got it all pretty much. <Did I? laughs> I mean, that's what we know. I mean,
is that kind of disappointing that there isn't more to tell about that then? Because, I personally was hoping for a Metroid announcement of some kind, and we kind of got one, but, you know, we'll get into that next episode. But to see Star Fox, even though I'm not huge into the franchise, I was excited for Nintendo fans to get some news on this, but it sounds like it's not very far along. And should they have waited to announce anything, or do you think it's good that they at least got our feet wet?
I think it's good that they just put it out there. When Pikmin 3 was announced, it almost seems like kind of it was like announced in a similar fashion, where it's just like, hey, we're making this game.
So 10 years from now, we'll see this.
But yeah, I'm glad that they mentioned it, because this is possibly the first Star Fox game since Star Fox 64 that Nintendo could be developing in-house. Would that be correct? Or at least
got me on that. I don't know.
Yeah.
They partnered.
No, that was it.
Command was, yeah. I think, like the Pixel Junk dudes.
Yeah.
What else? Namco was with the Star Fox Assault and, you know, Rare and all that stuff. So it'll be cool to see how Nintendo themselves, comes up with a Sonic era. Sonic still have Sonic on the mind. Star Fox game in 2014. I'm sure they have a lot of cool ideas for it, and I've been waiting for this game for a while. So
Star Fox was the game I wanted to see the most heading into E3. I said, you know, like, that's even more than a Metroid announcement. I'd want to see a Star Fox announcement, and I'd almost disagree. I think they should have held this back if it was no farther along than it is, because it is a game that a lot of people have been anticipating. Maybe not as eager or as openly as like Metroid or something, but you know, these franchises like Star Fox, F-Zero, a lot of people are kind of aware, if you're a Nintendo fan, that we haven't really had a new entry in a while. This was almost like a stealth announcement of it, rather than like the big, and now, ladies and gentlemen, Star Fox, and drop the mic. You know, like, we didn't get that kind of moment instead, and it almost seems like we're not allowed to get as excited about it as I want to, you know, and as someone who anticipated the announcement of this game. So
that's a good point of view. Sorry to cut you off if I did, but
no,
the one thing that I think maybe might kind of go along with that is, at the end of the digital event, they showed Miyamoto. It was like the very last thing. And he was like, oh, look at me, I'm tinkering around with something. And they blurred out the screen. You could clearly tell it was like a Star Fox-looking image.
Yep.
But what if they just left it at that and said, Miyamoto is working on something, but it's not time to share it? And then they would have stirred a bunch of speculation. We all would have been like, oh my god, you know, they are working on this. And then to not admit it's not that far along would at least keep our minds actively wondering. And then when they were ready, they'd be like, oh, okay, see, look what they've been doing. As opposed to now we know it's like, okay, well, now we just got to wait, like, kind of cranky, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it was so weird how they did it that way, because you can't have that screen in the background where you know you have to blur it out, because you know you're basically showing Star Fox, but in a way that is so, like, the audience has to figure it out on their own. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it was the most non-announcement I've ever seen, right? Because, like, I was in this chat room with people, and I didn't even see. I was, all of a sudden, I look at the chat, and everyone's like, OMG Star Fox! And I'm like, what? Where? You know?
Yeah. I watched it on my own because I missed the live showing of it, so I just had to kind of watch it. And I was like, well, that's kind of a weird way to end this. It's just sort of Miyamoto dicking around in a room somewhere, you know? And it was like, I went on later, and when I was talking with people, they were like, Star Fox was revealed. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, and went back and looked at it again. I was like, makes a little more sense, you know? So, but, and it just felt like it was kind of just snuck in, you know? And I don't think that's a good idea. I think they need to, you know, they need to wow us. They need to surprise us. They don't need to, you know.
I think particularly. Oh, sorry. Were you?
No. I'm done.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't particularly think it's like it can cheapen a more glamorous review and or reveal in like a future E3 or something. I'm going back to Pikmin 3 here, but when that game was shown at E3 gameplay footage, I was still as excited as I would have been if I knew nothing about that game beforehand. And just letting us know that the game exists, we can just kind of let our minds run wild with it. Like, you know, what will this game be? Who's going to be developing it? You know, and it's something that we can definitely look forward to in a future event. And maybe what we come up with, like in our heads, won't
so that
look
we can
like
disappoint ourselves later.
Not necessarily disappoint, even, but like it'll be fun to compare like that product with what we see in our minds. I don't
know. Yeah, and I can respect that point of view, but I would kind of pull out that. I mean, it didn't really work that great for Pikmin 3. I don't think I got the sense that it didn't sell that well. And you know, you want to. I mean, the point of these things is to get people, you know, hyped through the roof. And it just seems to me like, you know, doing it in such a subtle way, like when Star Fox comes out, it's like, oh yeah, well we knew about this, and yeah, we'll get excited about it, but probably not as much as if it was just like out of the blue. Oh hell yeah, they made a Star Fox, and it's coming out this year. Cool, you know.
And to counter that point with the Metroid thing, you know, all we know about that is that they acknowledge that there's a demand for the 2D style and the 3D Prime style, and that they have plans to make games for both, but there's just nothing concrete right now. That works almost better to me, for me as a Metroid fan, than if I was to get the Star Fox treatment of this. Because when I do see Metroid next, I know that they're going to probably blow it out. It's not going to be just this super teaser. But, you know, I think it's tough. I think they need to have something, some sort of hook like this. At least they felt that they needed to, and Star Fox happened to be it, because that was what started production. Plus, we haven't really heard from Miyamoto in a while, so to hear that he's working on it should be buzz enough as well, you would think.
Yeah. I mean, the game will be what it is, so I'm just talking about hype levels and stuff. Like, I'm going to play it no matter what, and I'm sure it's going to be great with Miyamoto at the helm. So I'm not worried about Star Fox. It's just more like, is this the did I get the reveal of Star Fox that I wanted going into E3? And I think that's maybe the one criticism I have of the presentation, was that I do wish that had been handled a little bit more, I don't know, just a little more exciting.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they should have like a crochet Star Fox, like a crochet R-Wing, and then flying around. And then,
yeah, no, marionettes, man. You know,
there
like
you go.
The puppets, yeah. Like Thunderbirds.
And then a barrel roll, and they throw them into the barrel and roll it down a hill.
That just all visual puns. You know,
like, it would be kind of great if they did a reveal via the robot chicken. You know,
yeah,
that would be kind of cool. I mean, it wouldn't have changed that there's nothing to show about the game, but I think seeing a robot chicken Miyamoto would have been pretty good. But let's jump into another Wii U title. We have Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, which I will admit is kind of a shocking surprise as well. I didn't expect this to happen. I never got to play the Canvas Curse, I believe it was called, on the 3DS. Was it 3DS or the regular DS?
DS.
DS.
So yeah, pretty old title, pretty old concept, but being done on the Wii U and in kind of a grander scale. And I always wanted to play Canvas Curse because it looked really cool, and I just never had the chance. And I know this sounds crazy from the, I guess, proclaimed Kirby hater I am, apparently. I just can't seem to get into the series very easily, but between the clay graphics, which just look really cool, in the same way that I guess the Yoshi game looks, or the Kirby's Epic Yarn did, I just love that they're experimenting with that, and the way that the animations work now, and when Kirby or anyone gets hit with something, the way that the clay molds against that, and it's very appealing to the eye. And then to get that stylus control gameplay, which looked really fun in the first place to me, I am so psyched for this. And I almost could say right now that I'm planning on buying it right now. Even though I have such a bad kind of history with the Kirby series, it looks too fun to ignore. The only thing that made me a little weary was the frame rate just seems kind of sluggish, which maybe that's because of the clay, but it just seemed like it wasn't very fluid. Mm. I don't know if that's just me. I don't know how I guess Canvas Curse looked, but I thought Canvas Curse was a lot more kind of, 60 frames per second, not 59 like this. You know what I'm saying? Put an analogy together.
Yeah. But I don't know. It looks really cool. I mean, I had a long conversation with my wife afterwards about that too, about how, you know, you, as technology marches on, there was a, you now have the option to make a game look like, hey, let's do one Gumby style. You know, you actually have the ability to take an idea that's, you know, in a strange way from film, it's an older idea. It's a different kind of stylistic choice that we wouldn't have been able to do before. Come up with something really compelling and different. So I've never really seen a game like that other than freaking Clay Fighter. So.
I know, Clay Fighter, Clay 63 Fighter. The third. Last game I played like that.
Yeah, so I mean, so I think it's got a great style. I'll say this, I've got the original Canvas Curse, and I know there's a lot of guys who are huge fans of it. I haven't played the whole thing. I basically played it for about 45 minutes. I picked it up. I actually found a used copy of it at Goodwill, and that like never happens, you know. So I was like, oh, heck yeah, you know, pick it up for $5. So the gameplay is kind of hard for me to wrap my mind around, so I don't know if I'm going to pick this up day one. I'll probably do a wait and see approach on it, but I love the style of it. Looks like a cool thing. And I like that they haven't forgotten about Canvas Curse, just because, you know, it was a really early DS title, really focused on stylus control. So,
and they've had a lot of Kirby games since that have done different things.
Exactly. So it's kind of cool to see a callback to that design.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
one of those games where I'm probably more excited for other people getting a chance to play a sequel to Canvas Curse than I am for myself personally, you know.
I'm just excited to maybe like a Kirby game.
Dude, did you play Return to Dreamland?
Which one was that?
On the Wii, the Wii version?
No.
Yeah, play that one.
Play that one?
Yeah.
Play that one and shut the hell up? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, play that one and shut the hell up. It's a good one. All right.
You know, I wonder where I can find that. Maybe it's on Amazon still.
This game, this is definitely one of my favorite reveals at E3. The visual style, pardon one more pun, but it really breaks the mold as far as unique visual styles go. Like, I always think about, you know, how games can be presented, not just from a realistic perspective, but all different kinds of art styles. And we've seen a lot of different art styles over the years, but this one in particular, just I haven't seen too many games like this either, and I love what they're doing with it. I like how you can see like thumb smudges like on like some of the environments and stuff like that, and the way it animates is just, it's really funny and just and really just fun to look at. There's a game, I'm actually going back to Pikmin again. Pikmin 2 had a lot of really cool concept art.
Mm-hmm.
Of like clay versions of these characters, and after seeing that, I've always wanted to see, like, or since that, I wanted to see a Nintendo game adopt that style. And not only are we getting that, but it's being designed around a sequel to Canvas Curse, which is one of my favorite DS games. So it's like win-win situation right there.
Yeah. Awesome. I should probably finish Canvas Curse and. I'll be on next week's podcast and tell you what I think of that. So.
Cool. Yeah, I just went to Amazon and I said to myself, hey, if it's cheap enough, I'm just going to buy it right now, per Chris's suggestion. And I'm not going to pay $95 for Return to Dreamland.
Wow.
Which is how much, that's how much someone on Amazon is selling for. I guess news are as low as
$79.95.
Wow. How?
Used is $44.98, so that's more of a realistic thing. But
that is mind blowing. It is a great game. I didn't realize it was so rare. Scarce.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe I should do this for only $8.89. I can get the manual. It's a pamphlet. Physical paper.
Piece of the time.
Yeah, so I could do that. Released January 1st, 2011, according to
you. You told us how you love reading game manuals while you eat dinner and stuff. So.
Yeah, I'll just go back in time and give that to my young self.
Yeah. You can play the game on in style. Just go on YouTube and watch a video of it.
With a controller in my hand, like mimicking. Yeah. Man, this
like when you were
lag.
A little kid and you would go to the arcade with no money and you'd just crank on the joysticks. Yeah.
I did exactly that.
I wonder if that would work. I'm saying, like, for me, like, to actually enjoy the game by watching it on YouTube. I don't know.
No.
Probably not.
Nah. I think maybe some RPGs you could do that way, but I don't think so on a game like
If I don't
Kirby.
Get my ass up off of the Xenoblade delay that I've still not beaten it. You know, I think I might have to do that with the ending. but okay, so let's jump in to pretty much the last grouping of games that we have here, okay? You know, we still have some time left, so we have some time to talk, but these are kind of the lesser-known little mentions, except for Mario Maker, which we'll get into right now. Chris, you in particular wanted to make sure we got to this, you know, this episode while you're here.
Yeah. I don't have a whole lot to say about it, but I could make a few quick points. Did you want to say something first, Steven?
Yeah, I'm trying to see where my notes are for this. Just to kind of touch base, I'm presuming everyone who's listening to this has seen the unveiling of everything, but essentially it is Nintendo's answer to allowing us to create Mario levels and not hack our Wiis, you know, to make them ourselves. it seemed kind of a mix of both detailed, but also limited in some regards. We can switch between the classic Mario style and the new Super Mario Brothers U style, which is great because both are great looking, you know, graphical styles, of course. But there's no middle ground. There's no Super Mario World, Super Mario 3. There's no Super Mario 2. Even would be kind of neat. So you're kind of limited in that sense. I don't know if they're planning to do that as maybe DLC, which I would honestly, depending on the price of the original package, I would be interested in that. You know, and we don't know too much, I guess, about how we're going to be sharing the levels with each other, or how much of it's going to be levels that they make that we can alter versus just, is it just going to be a sandbox where we just make our own levels? So there's still some time to tell. They have little Mario Paint references and everything as well, so it seems like they're putting some heart and soul and some nods in this game, releasing sometime in 2015. I think it's getting a retail release, right? I mean, do we know that?
I don't know about that.
I don't know if they've said.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's pretty much what was described and what was shown. So, Chris...
Real quick. I just wanted to add, because you were talking about the graphical style. So there is a quote from Tezuka where he says, obviously there will be other graphical styles included. This is in reference to the two that were shown. Nothing's been decided yet, but I'd also like to include other graphics that aren't Mario. So obviously, that's kind of interesting.
Is that so obviously, he says? It's supposed to be obvious to
me? I think the only reason you would say that, unless it's some sort of mistranslation or something, but is because, yeah, I think everyone was like, man, you know, the original graphics are great, the new ones are great, but, yeah, I'd like to have, like, Mario 3 in there, or Mario 2, or Mario World.
And because we all have different favorite Mario games, and what I hope they would do is allow us to have different elements that are maybe only found in, like, the cape. You know, if that's only found in Mario World, or even the, you know, Tanuki suit, or that kind of stuff. And we could actually include those in even different graphical styles, or just having them within that original graphical style. I think it opens up the possibilities even more so. Mm. So I think, yeah, this appeared limited, but that quote is really great. Thanks for bringing that in.
Yeah, that was news to me. I hadn't heard that, so that's great news.
News you got on Negative World Podcast. So only here. You heard it here first.
Yes. Hopefully. I will not cite the website I just read this from.
Negative World, maybe? Or
please continue.
Yeah, so about Mario Maker, I mean, there's a couple of things that about this one. Obviously, since I was a little kid, I dreamed of making my own Mario level. So this is an exciting thing. And I like the fact that they can switch between the different styles, especially now if we're hearing that it's going to include like Mario 3, maybe some other because Mario 3 is probably possibly my favorite game of all time. So the thought of making games in that style, it's like the 10-year-old in me does a backflip, you know. but the other thing that I think is really cool about it is the gamepad is so perfect for that. Then yeah. You know, there are situations, you know, because that's the question that's kind of a lot of people, a lot of guys like us have right now, is like, have we really gotten to see how it has the gamepad really been utilized that as well as it could be? Something like this, you know, is the perfect implementation of it. And it also kind of beats the bootleggers, because if you can do the switch between the different graphical styles right away, you know, like, oh man, that is so cool. You know, that is something that I've never seen. You know, I've never seen a homemade Mario game with the old sprites where, you know, you could do it in, you know, just push a button and get a new Super Mario Brothers version, or push a button in, you know, Super Mario Brothers 3. So, so to me, it's just like a really, it's a compelling piece of software for the Wii U specifically that you couldn't have on the Wii or the SNES or something. You know, it's something that really plays to the Wii U's strengths as a console. Going along with that, what I found interesting is I have a friend who, you know, had a NES like we did, had an SNES, and then basically became a Sony fan after that. And every time E3 rolls around, you know, he knows I'm a big Nintendo fan, and he's like, oh, you know, Donkey Kong game. You know, like, he's never, like, excited about anything. But he actually called me up after E3 and was like, dude, that Mario Maker game, like, that's he's like, I have wanted to make my own Mario levels for years. That is so cool. It almost, it's like, I kind of want a Wii U now, you know? And
wow,
it was cool to me that it was like that, like, I don't know, like, for some reason, that was the game that really grabbed him. I don't know if he's just one guy, you know, but it was kind of cool to me to think, like, all these years I've tried to get him excited about Smash Brothers, I try to get him excited about, you know, Zelda, I try to get him excited about all these games, but it's Mario Maker that actually kind of fires his imagination. So I don't
know. That is interesting.
You know, yeah, I mean, maybe looking at a sleeper hit, or, you know, at least one guy wants a Wii U that didn't before. So
yeah.
Well, you know, one thing that I think it's important to mention is you were saying that you can switch graphical styles on the fly, which you can't do, you know, traditionally with current programs that may exist for this. But you can also, and this has been confirmed, just jump right in to the level. You can just pretty much add an asset and then play and see if it works, and then cut back. Right. And there's, like, it looked like there was no load time, there was no lag. So right. You can easily test out your levels that you're playing on the fly. And I can't remember what game it was. I swear this exists somewhere, but there's a game that you can edit levels in. Maybe it's not necessarily Pushmo, it's something else before that. But that Nintendo did allow you to kind of do this sort of tinkering with, but you had to load the level afterwards. And or Smash Brothers, I think, when you made your own Smash levels. I don't think it was as easy to kind of jump in and test something, because you had to load the whole thing, and it took a little while. You know, maybe that's the disk fault or something like that, but it just wasn't as intuitive to tinker. And so I didn't play too many levels and try different things. But then again, you know, a Smash level is a whole different type of creative process than the Mario creation. But the fact that you can do that on the fly is almost as important, if not more, than actually the different graphical styles. If we had to, you know, build a level, then press play and let it load, and then tinker through,
right,
and then have to go back when we find a problem, that would be more of a deal breaker than the fact that we only get the two styles. So, very excited to hear that news, and then what Joe just told us kind of seals the deal on this, that this is going to be an epic little tinker toy for Nintendo fans. Peter, anything?
I'm looking forward to playing some incredibly insane levels that people make. hopefully that stuff will be easily shareable.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if maybe they, I mean, not necessarily in the same way, but maybe hashtags, so you could, like, tag Negative World on any levels that we do, and then you could search for that.
Oh, that would be so awesome.
Yeah. That'd be great.
As opposed to having communities.
Yeah. Dude, we could all design our own Negative World Mario game. You know, like linking all of our levels together.
Yeah,
if it could do something like that, that Negative World would be dead for a month while we just did that in universe. You know,
like, we get like 64 people involved. Yeah. Everyone makes one level.
Everyone's arguing over who gets to be 1-1 or 8-4. You know.
You know, I think one of the most interesting bits that was discussed during the Treehouse presentation was that they were talking about how the little graphical details that were added to Mario Maker to make the game seem a little bit more friendly to people who aren't exactly, you know, interested in games where you customize and make your own levels,
like the patchwork look on the original graphics, or
Yeah, and like the Mario Paint thing, like where, you know, where like a fly like flies in like while you're making levels and trying to distract you, and you have to get rid of it, and like when you drag a character on the screen, like it sweats and like it's like all freaking out and stuff like that, or or like if you grab a Goomba and shake it around, it breaks up into little Goombas. And there was a really funny one. I forgot what it was, but one of the Treehouse people was explaining that, like, if you get the stylus and start moving it towards Mario, like, you're going to pick him up, he starts, like, freaking out and sweating, and it's just like, little things like that, I think, go a long way in making the game more fun as a creator, as well as, you know, like, a game. Like, it seems like it'll be extremely fun to make these levels as much as it is going to play them, so I think that's cool.
It's kind of the Nintendo touch to it. You know, like that was one thing that was cool about Mario Paint when you played it for the first time, because there were like PC paint programs and stuff that could do the same things that Mario did even at that time. But Mario Paint was just more fun to play with. I don't know. There was just like the look and feel of it was just, you know. And so I definitely, there's some callbacks to Mario Paint here, so I hope it's in that same spirit.
Well, awesome. I think that was a game that surprised, well, didn't really surprise us all because we heard about it like a day or two beforehand.
Yeah. But, well, and I poo-pooed that. I thought that was not real. So yeah. Kudos to everybody who believed, because I, you know, it was a pleasant surprise. I was happy to be wrong.
Yeah, I just refused to make a decision on it either way. So I was a winner either way. So I could win via disappointment or excitement. All right, so we have a few more on the roster that we can fit in here in the next couple of minutes. Not Octorokin, well, yeah, Octorokin. Peter, you specifically kind of wanted to mention Pokemon, Ruby
yes.
and Sapphire, the remakes, Omega Ruby and
Alpha Sapphire.
You know, not to squash this right away, but this was the announcement that to me was the least lustrous and the least bombastic, because they just kind of showed a quick trailer which looked kind of like what we've all seen, although I don't think we've seen anything from them before this, right?
Yeah, well, there was like a short clip showing two of the legendary Pokemon just kind of moving around, but that's about it. Yeah,
I mean, for me, I admit that my Pokemon love is just it's on the back burner right now, because I have some games that I still have to finish, and this to me looks again just like the games that we just had released, the X and Y. But, you know, tell us what you thought about it, and maybe why I'm dismissing it too soon, if you feel.
Okay, so Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire were, you know, that's the third generation of Pokemon, so it's still, it was pretty early in the series, and they were, so as a result, they were like one of the first Pokemon games that I had the pleasure of playing. Have a lot of really good memories playing those games. I really liked the island setting, and the music was great. I liked all the characters and Pokemon, all that stuff. So recently I was thinking of, like, I wanted to replay that game. Like I had a really, because I've been playing, Pokemon Y lately, and I really started getting back into the Pokemon games, and I felt like replaying Pokemon Ruby. So when this game was announced, I was incredibly jazzed to play a remade version of one of my favorite games from my childhood. And what they showed in the clip is pretty much like everything I want from a remake. I saw environments that I remembered as a kid that, you know, look like, you know, they're in 3D now and they just looked really cool. And seeing all these characters, like characters that I remember like being redesigned, like, you know, they have different looks to them. And, you know, your favorite starter Pokemon now has a Mega Evolution. And I like seeing how the world of Hoenn and Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire are evolving. Sorry, one more pun there. Are evolving.
You know, you got to expect puns out of a guy who goes by the name Octorokin, right? You know,
right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like what we've seen of the game, because as someone who has really fond memories of Ruby and Sapphire, I'm excited to see or to re-experience this game in a different light, like seeing what's new, what's familiar. And yeah, it just looks great. I'm excited for more Pokemon in 2014.
All right. Well, that actually was a pretty good description. I enjoyed Sapphire when I played it. I own it. And again, I think I'm just a little bit on a burnout that's completely unrelated to this announcement. But yeah, maybe I should be looking into this some more.
And I will say that playing some online matches with some of the Negative World guys definitely got me even more interested in like the gameplay aspect of it. Like, I've always liked the exploration and you know, like the character designs and stuff like that. But I enjoy the competitive aspect of it, and I mean, I'm looking forward to exploring a bit more of that with Ruby and Sapphire, because once you have an established team or two in a Pokemon game, you kind of feel like it's somewhat of a grind to continue making more teams, I guess. Like, that's where the RPG grinding starts to feel like it kicks in. But when you have a new Pokemon game, it's like a clean slate. You can, you know, pick a starter and, you know, pick a new team all over again without it feeling like you're going out of your way to do it. You get to explore the world and have fun and make a team in the process of it. So whenever a new Pokemon RPG comes out, I'm just excited to put together a new team and, you know, see where it goes from there.
Joe, how do you feel about this?
I don't really have too much to add. The games look great. I'm super excited that this is the last generation, or at least region, that I have not played from the series. So I'm really excited to check that off of my list. And I think X and Y played great, so I'm excited to see you know, another game done in those styles. That's pretty much it. I mean, I think one thing that's intriguing about these games is I do like the sort of team emphasis, the team Aqua and Magma. I always was excited to find out what that was going, how that storyline plays out. So I'm looking forward to that as well. But that's pretty much it.
If it's anything like the original Ruby and Sapphire, I know they changed it for Emerald, but depending on the two versions, both teams are, I don't want to spoil it, but both teams are very different depending on what version you get. So that's something cool to look forward to.
All right, sounds good. Let's move on to Theater Rhythm. Well, what's the actual title of this? I'm sorry. I've been calling it Theater Rhythm 2, but it's actually got a name.
It's Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call.
Curtain Call, okay. So you also wanted to bring this up, Peter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've played I own the original. You know, but tell us about what was announced at E3 and what you think.
I also have the original game. It's one of my favorite 3DS games. I love rhythm games. I like Final Fantasy music. This game seems like, you know, it's very similar to that, but they're introducing a lot of cool new stuff, a lot of new music, a lot of new characters. I would actually compare the original Theater Rhythm a bit to Smash Brothers, where when I was playing Theater Rhythm, I started thinking about tons of Final Fantasy games again, you know, getting back into the music. Like, it's such a celebration of Final Fantasy, and that's, you know, I'm looking forward to that again with Theater Rhythm, playing all these new songs and seeing all these characters in the cute art style that these games have going for them. And it was also one of my favorite Street Pass experiences, the original Theater Rhythm. I took it to a convention and got tons of Street Passes. And each Street Pass, you know, people can mention like their favorite, or like their favorite characters, and like what song they played the most, and like stuff like that. Like, it would show their party and things like that. Little things like that I'm interested in when it comes to Street Pass. And you could also share something called a Dark Note, which is somewhat like a custom track that you would play in your file. Curtain Call, the new modes that it's adding, one of them is called a quest melody or quest medley. I think it's replacing the Dark Note style from the original game, in where you go on these mini quests as a party that you form out of all these different Final Fantasy characters. I'm not really sure what that entails yet, but it's, you know, you'll be playing rhythm games and stuff. But I read that you can share the quests that you went on, like these quest maps, with other people via Street Pass, and I'm excited to, you know, get that Street Pass activated and doing some of that stuff. There's other stuff that they added to it. There's like a versus multiplayer mode where it's sort of like a almost like a puzzle game where if you do well, you can create like status effects to like mess up the other player. You both have to play the same song and you're both competing for like the best score. And then there's a daily feature, which is sort of like a daily challenge where it's a different song each day, I believe. And if you complete it, you just get bonus rhythm points. And rhythm points are in the original game were, you know, for unlocking a lot of characters, a lot of music, stuff like that. I'm really looking forward to this. Like I said, because I'm a rhythm game fan, I like the Final Fantasy stuff, and it definitely seems like they're taking the original game and expanding it in like all the ways that I wanted to see it expanded. A lot more music, some cool new modes, just a bunch of new content, and I'm looking forward to that. It's kind of like it's not like, you know, it wasn't some huge E3 announcement, but as like a more modest announcement, I think it was one of my favorites.
One quick question for you. I don't know if we really know this, but do we have a true idea of how much content there will be, and or if songs from the first one will be in this?
Yes. From what I understand, I think most of the songs from the original game are returning. A couple games like Final Fantasy Mystic Quest on Super Nintendo. That's Super Nintendo, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
That game, Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn, that new the role-playing game. So, and I think Final Fantasy Type Zero, I believe. So there's going to be a lot of new games added to the playlist. And characters, I think I read somewhere that they're at least over like 60. And I saw tons of new characters, like characters from Final Fantasy Tactics, a bunch of new ones from all the previous games that were in Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy. So they're really beefing up the content here. And of course, there will be DLC, like the original game. The songs were, I think, 99 cents. So if you're into that kind of thing, I personally downloaded most of the songs and I had a great time playing them. One thing that I liked about Theater Rhythm is that it kind of gave me like a different sort of appreciation for Final Fantasy music. The rhythms that you tap along to in these songs almost kind of like complement the original melodies. I was having a lot of fun with the beats that the designers implemented into these tracks. It's fun to play around with Final Fantasy music and stuff like that. I don't think... I said it was like an announcement. This wasn't an E3 announcement, but, it was just shown there. So this wasn't like an E3 reveal.
I'm trying to remember why I had it on my list then.
Well, it was in the time period, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was announced very recently.
Well, didn't they kind of blow out what it's going to be all about here, or no? Did we know a lot of the information beforehand?
Me personally, like I found out most of this information from the E3 show. You said you played the original Theater Rhythm. Is there anything about this that seems like it would interest you?
I'm not so sure yet. I've never really played many Final Fantasy games, but I've always loved the music, and that's what got me to impulse buy the first one, and I had a lot of fun with it. You know, I completed all the songs in the 13 games. I think it was like 3 songs each, and then I did dabble in the Dark Notes, and I didn't end up doing any DLC. But in the end, I found it. One of the challenges was that to really appreciate the game, you have to be able to hear the music very well, and I didn't find myself gaming in moments where I could do that. I did a lot of it at work or. You know, on the ride home, that kind of stuff.
I will say that playing the game with a pair of headphones, it's almost like a completely different experience.
Yeah, and I didn't have times where I was sitting at home playing it with my headphones on, just completely devoid of, you know, any sort of other distractions and or other influences. And so that kind of killed the momentum, and then I just stopped playing altogether. But I did have a lot of fun with it, so I guess if there was more content after, with 13 games and 3 songs each, you know, 36 main songs, I might be interested in biting again, but I'm not sure if I would want to bite it at the full price. You know, I'm willing to be persuaded, because I did like the art style and the music.
Sorry, are we going to make a curtain call on this discussion here?
Wow.
You are putting me to shame. I haven't done a single pun, like, all episode. I'm going to call it jet lag right there. You know, that's a great segue, though. Let's you know, put the curtain call on this, as he said, and get to our last set of games. We're just going to combine them into one quick discussion. There was 2 quote-unquote projects that were announced, and I don't know too much about these. I didn't get a chance to follow up too much, so again, I'm going to rely on you guys to kind of tell the story. But I think these are Miyamoto projects, am I correct? Okay.
I think so.
And the first one's called Project Giant Robot, and the other one's Project Guard. The thing I do know about Project Guard is that it involves some sort of, almost like a tower defense, where you can control the cameras, security cameras, in a, you know, some sort of complex. And I think there's lasers attached to these cameras, and pretty much you have hordes of enemies trying to get in from all sorts of angles, and you have to monitor these cameras in these specific locations and attack and switch between them all, I think maybe using the gamepad or something. That was the perception I got. Correct me if I'm wrong. And as far as the giant robot, it was maybe like a Godzilla-type thing. You know, Peter, I think you had something you wanted to say about this, so if you don't mind, please kind of lead the charge.
Sure. Project Robot, I don't know if you guys were watching the Treehouse segments or the demos with Project Robot, but there was some really funny stuff. So in this game, it's almost like a giant robot fighter meets sumo wrestler style of game, where you design a robot and you pit it against one of the computer enemies who are also assembled with the same parts that you can use. And you use the gamepad, I think, to control like the upper part of the robot's body or something like that. And your goal is to knock over the other robot. But the robots, at least in this demo, the physics are just so ridiculous. Seeing your creation just kind of stumble and shamble and like kind of butt against the other robot is just—it's a really funny sight. And I think, you know, putting together these creations and these goofy scenarios where you'll have a robot and fight against it. Like, there were these two robots. One was like a robo table, and the other one was like a pair of like silverware, like attached to robot legs. just these extremely goofy situations. So I think it'll be a really fun game to play with people and just kind of like get a little experimental with.
It kind of sounds like a robotic version of Freaky Forms that you fight, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. And the customization, I don't know how, Nintendo probably has a lot more plans for this game, but at the moment, each part could be expanded. Like, its length and width could be increased, like, no matter what part it was. So the Treehouse people on the stream were just getting ridiculous. Like, they had the body, they made the body like a head-looking thing, like a robot head, and they made it so big that its actual head looked like a thumbtack on top of it. And its legs were like robo head legs that they made really wide. So just these absolute monstrosities, and trying to work around the physics that you've created for yourself to defeat your enemies is pretty funny.
Can we adjust the physics of the world?
I'm not really sure.
Because I think
I would say, like, if this game became when it becomes like a full-fledged product, that's something I'd like to see.
Yeah, because I mean, if you've got, you know, the, like, say, tiny legs and a big body and then a small head, obviously you're not going to be able to really move very well. But maybe if there was like low gravity, and then, you know, so your character could move better, but then the guy who has a more normal character, he's kind of going all over the place or something. Yeah. It makes it for more interesting scenarios.
I think the only environment they showed was a normal-looking city scene, and the only environmental hazard that I noticed is when the player was backing up from this one robot, and was unaware that there was a telephone or like telephone poles or like cables behind the robot. It actually tripped the robot and the person lost the game. so like funny stuff like that. I thought it was kind of cool.
Cool. I mean, do you know anything about Project Guard that you want to mention? Or did I kind of sum it up?
Project Guard, that's another really neat looking game. I didn't watch as much Project Guard, but I like the idea of having, I think it was like 9 or so different like monitors that you have to pay attention to defend this base against all these different robots. Again, that's a really cool use of the gamepad that I was hoping to see at this E3. I think that's what these two games mean to me the most, is I wanted to see some cool gamepad stuff, and both of these projects look like they're using the gamepad in some really fun ways. Project Guard looks pretty challenging and frantic and just like a really neat take on the tower defense style of game. Did any of you guys watch Project Guard?
Yeah, I was just looking at the video while you guys were talking about Pokemon, so I'd have something to say about it. yeah, it looks kind of interesting. It looked like this sequel to Night Trap, right? You know, like
yeah,
you've got all these different monitor screens there, and you have to click between them, and you're on one trying to do something, and you know you can see on the other that something else is going on. So I don't know. I mean, both of these games, they look like some really interesting, creative, insane ideas, but they also looked a little undercooked. Now, I haven't really looked real deep into it yet. I mean, I literally was just watching it like 5 minutes ago, you know. So I don't know. I mean, it could be cool. I agree with you. Looking at it, I was like, this is an interesting take on tower defense, kind of almost a first person view or almost an outsider's view, because you're doing everything with cameras. So I don't know. It's not going to knock Call of Duty off of the sales charts, but I mean, it does look to me like something that could be, you know, like I said, the only thing I can think of to compare it to is Night Trap, which that's a bizarre thing to be comparing a new game to, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. When I was watching it, someone in the chat was like, it's a not terrible Night Trap or something like that.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
But, for me, these kind of, these just kind of look like tech demos to me, but it's hard to say exactly how close to a finished product these, you know, like what the final product would look like.
That's actually what kind of worried me when I saw these games, because I mean, with names like Project Giant Robot and Project Guard, I mean, you can tell these are very early in development, and I hope they actually become like full fledged games as opposed to just neat ideas that.
Right.
Might not,
But you know, they kind of like Nintendo Land had some stuff that was revealed early, like the Chase Me stuff, or the Chase Mario started as Chase Me and so it was kind of a tech demo for the guys at E3 that became a game that, well, you know, pretty good game, you know. So I don't know. I think there's probably I think they probably wouldn't show it if they didn't intend us to play the game at some point. Right. They definitely look, I mean, I haven't really dug into it, but they both look pretty fun, but they look weird, and that's kind of what I like about them, you know, just looking at it, they look kind of strange, so.
Yeah.
Definitely not something I've played 100 times before, you know?
I think that they said something about, like, oh, we could see the Project Guard and Giant Robots as being part of Star Fox. Like, I think it was Miyamoto who said, like, when I... and thinking about this giant robot, like it's something that I could see being dropped out of whatever that big ship is that the little R-Wing is coming from. Yeah, right. So I don't know if like we are seeing like little bits and pieces of Star Fox, or maybe these are just ideas that Miyamoto is kicking around to be in Star Fox, because yeah, even the Project Guard thing, I could imagine that being, you know, like a tower defense segment of a Star Fox game. It certainly had that sci-fi look to it. But the only part that really, you know, aside from just being tech demos, the part that really kind of sold me on these concepts was during the Treehouse when they had like 10 people up on stage playing Project Guard, and all of them were in charge of like one of the screens on the monitor, and they were in charge of telling the guy on the gamepad, like, oh, you know, segment number 9 or something like that. That's the kind of like local co-op, almost party game atmosphere that I think actually was kind of cool.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was just going to suggest that'd be kind of a cool multiplayer experience if there was, you know, maybe each person could control 2 or 3 cameras or something like that, and then you got to coordinate together maybe to, you know, to notify each other of where the robots are moving in kind of a limited, almost asymmetric gameplay. Or maybe one person could be the robots, you know, in a multiplayer session.
Yeah,
but I think what Joe's talking about is it's almost like an ad hoc multiplayer, where it's not a part of the mechanics of the game so much as it is, look, when you're in the room and everybody's looking at the screens, you know, almost you could have, you know, it's infinite multiplayer, because you can have as many people in the room watching screens trying to help you find that chicken that's trying to eat your security cameras, you know, like as possible. And I can't remember, there was another game that was kind of like that. Was it that Nintendo released recently that I was playing with my wife, and I realized, like, she was giving me pointers, like, as we were playing, like, oh, look over there, you know, and it was almost like a multiplayer game, even though she wasn't really playing, she was just kind of spotting for me.
Could have been Game & Wario or something like that?
I didn't play Game & Wario.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'll remember in an hour or something.
That does sound familiar, yeah.
Maybe it was Babysitting Mama, I don't know.
but yeah, even with all those dozen people or whatever it was, I mean, it was hard. They didn't succeed. I don't know if they succeeded at all. I think they lost every time, which is amazing.
God bless tower defense, right? It's like a game for people who are addicted to failure, because it's the hardest damn genre ever.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad way to segue out of that.
No.
Well, you know, it's probably time we start wrapping up anyway. You know, until the next happy time that we can segue into things. Before I jump into the, you know, same old closing statements, I wanted to ask everyone what their favorite moment and their least favorite moment of the show was. Just, you know, your own personal. We'll start with Chris.
Favorite, like, individual moment or just reveal or...
Whatever you want to define it.
Yeah, I would just say Splatoon. I think the revelation of a new IP, something totally unexpected, something in a shooter genre that's not just the same old boring shooter that looks compelling, that to me, I walked away from that thinking, yeah, you know, this is the kind of thing that I want to see more of from Nintendo right now. So that's what has my imagination excited the most right now.
Okay. And then do you have... I mean, maybe we shouldn't be saying least favorite moments just to not be on downers. But I mean, was there anything? Well, not least favorite, but what was the least impactful?
Least impactful of the actual, just of E3 in general, or whatever.
You know what? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got you. I would say probably I'm still on the, you know, not sure about Amiibo, I guess. You know, knowing exactly what that's going to be about, you know, it's kind of. There are ways that this kind of concept could be done well, I think, but I'm just a 35-year-old man who doesn't give a shit, I think. So
you're not excited about another near unpronounceable word for us Nintendo fans to have to say for the next 10 years?
Yeah. Although I got to give him credit, you know, like looking at it, it was like it's not as shocking. Maybe we're just numb to it. It's like, I wasn't stunned by it anymore. It was like, oh, they're going to call it Amiibo.
Yeah.
Of course they are. You know, like that's
it made complete sense to me, and I admit that's not necessarily okay.
Yeah.
If it was called Amiigo, I could get behind it. I'd be like, Amiigo, yeah.
Yes. I don't.
Oh, you were so close. You got the B upside down. If it was. But yeah. I don't know. That's probably the thing that I'm just the most kind of like, I don't know, guys, you know, so.
Yeah.
All right. And then Peter, you know, start with your least favorite and then move. That way we at least end on a happy note in the end.
Yeah. Yes.
So what was your least impactful moment of the show?
You know, I really don't have much of an answer for that. Like everything that I saw seemed really cool to me. If I have to pick something, Nope, actually, I can't do it. There's nothing I saw.
That. Awesome.
So, yeah.
All right, well, can you pick a favorite then? I mean, or is there too many to tell?
I think I can pick a favorite. I also thought Splatoon was a really good announcement. It just came out of absolutely nowhere, or at least it seemed like it did. And it looks like another great multiplayer experience from Nintendo. And I love seeing Nintendo try new things. I love seeing Nintendo experiment with multiplayer stuff like that. I like the mechanics that were shown. It just looks like a really really enjoyable game. I think that was cool. That's my favorite.
All right, fantastic, Joe. Least impactful.
Least impactful. I'm actually going to go straight negative. The thing that I did, it's not even an announcement or a game or anything. It was just having my well-documented nemesis, Jeff Keighley, hosting what was such an awesome Smash Brothers tournament. I was so excited watching the tournament. And then every time his smarmy face came on the screen, I was just like, why is he here? But you know what? I mean, but on the upside, it's possible that, as Chris said way early on in tonight's recording, it's possible that it's kind of like an olive branch to, segments of gaming media that are going to be important to Nintendo, that maybe it was just like, hey, yeah, we're not doing our normal press conference, we're not really throwing you a bone, media, but hey, Jeff Keighley, get involved with this event, and we kind of foster that relationship that way. So, whatever. And then as far as what I did like, I already mentioned the treehouse thing. I think that's like the greatest revelation. I would expect that the other companies would do this now. Just, why not? If you're going to have a show floor, set up a friggin' camera and stream it over the internet, and now you have a whole week to get through to your audience. So that was just so fun for me.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just going to make one quick statement saying how the Treehouse streams made this one of my favorite E3s to watch, because, I mean, before, you'd have to like either look up videos or it just seemed like if you weren't at E3 getting the content online, you kind of had to search for it a little bit more, and it wasn't as like fun, just kind of like seeing like off-screen footage and like stuff like that. Having it presented to you by, people who are working on these games, and like having them explain the mechanics, and like after one game just go right into another. I thought that was really, really awesome. They added a nice touch of humor to everything, explained things really well, made me interested in games that I didn't think I was going to be interested in.
Yep, I think it sold me on maybe two games that I probably wasn't going to plan to purchase before. So, and as far as actual announcement, Captain Toad. I mean, come on, that was so good. Amy's throwing a fist in the air for Captain Toad. what about you, Stephen?
I mean, that is a good answer, though, the Captain Toad, because I'm not going to say it's mine, but I'm so happy that A Pony Eats Carrots is her name on the board. That she's finally going to get a Toad game, and even Amy, because I know Amy, really likes Toad too. It's just, it makes me so happy for other people, not even just myself, but okay, least impactful, would actually have to, I mean, technically I think Pokemon of the announced stuff during the event. But again, I'm willing to look into that deeper and, refute my own decision, but, the lack of Mario Kart DLC, was kind of that was the most disappointing or least impactful thing. Although maybe that's a bad way to describe it now. But yeah, I mean, I was pretty convinced that we'd hear something about that. I guess just in my own heart. I mean,
holding out? Are you like looking for a certain character or something?
No. Well, I mean, it would be nice to maybe get some of our old favorites, like Dry Bones.
Dry Bones.
I mean, I'm literally holding my Dry Bones Kinect figure, K-Nex figure right now. But, I think it would be great to expand on the game. I don't want them to wait too long to announce that they can do it. Right now the hype is high, and it'd be great if, maybe it's related to Amiibo, but I just was thinking that they were going to announce something, at least for the battle mode, just throw us a bone, you know? Plus, if they did, I probably wouldn't have gotten a negative 60 in the predictathon, which, according to the average, puts me around a monkey guessing at random.
Yeah. So,
I love how Infinity Wave wrote that little factoid, and then I'm the only asshole with that score. So, maybe if that had been in existence. although, you know what? There's 21 people who did that, who wanted to see Mario Kart there, and or thought it would be there. So maybe if we all had gotten it, the average still would have been me, and I still would have been a monkey. But anyway, on a high note, though, the favorite moment, I hate to be so fucking, like, normal, or not normal, but just obvious, but the Zelda trailer just looks so cool. It looks so beautiful. It the description of that open world and the possibilities just got my brain kind of just a flutter with ideas again, you know? And Skyward Sword I thought was an amazing game that controlled amazingly and looked beautiful, but the one downside was that it was so closed off.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea that they were going to have this, you know, connected world, which did happen. I mean, getting to the temples was more of a challenge than it ever has been, really, in a 3D Zelda to some degree. And yet, it still was so disconnected. And the sky, which was a great concept, was even that felt disconnected because it was even emptier than the ocean in Wind Waker, which actually is pretty full if you really consider it. So this looks like it might be, them trying to fix those, correct those wrongs and look stylish as hell at the same time. So I got to go with that. But Captain Toad is quite up there too. If only they could have a cameo in each other's games. what if Captain Toad found the Triforce in Ocarina of Time? Captain Toad.
That would be one hell of a twist in the story.
Maybe he already did. Maybe that's why he has his own game now.
he put his hand on there before Link or Ganon and said, "I want my own game." Oh, he was pure of heart, and so it happened.
But, yeah, he would say, "I want my own game." Come on, you gotta do your Toad voice again, Steven.
Oh, mine? We need Amy. Oh, I want my own game.
That was pretty good. That was almost that sounded more good. Like the cartoon Toad from the early 90s.
No, he's more like New York. He's like, "I want my own game and a pizza," or something like that. I don't even know what the fuck that was. well, no, because he always, I don't know. He'd say things like, "Anna, you feathered freak." He's like always use like adjectives in weird ways.
Some stupid one-liner or something.
That bonehead Bowser! or whatever that is. Oh, anyway. That's perfect spot. A perfect spot to end the show. It's been a nice long discussion about E3, and we have another one planned for a couple days from now. So hopefully you've enjoyed this, and we'll enjoy with a new set of guests. And hopefully we won't retread too much, but we got through way more than I even realized we were going to in this episode. So... thank you very much, Peter, Chris, Joe, Toad, Captain Toad, for everything, for joining us on the show. The listeners out there, thank you. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, which I hope you do, it's kind of like one of the biggest ones we'll probably have this year, do so at negativeworld.org, which is the website that causes this all to be. And you just have to act like a Captain Toad and find the thread associated to the episode.
Nice.
And if you're not a subscriber and you don't want to subscribe to Negative World, you can find us on Facebook. You just got to search for negativeworld.org, or you can follow us on Twitter at @negative_world. So again, big thanks to everybody. Hopefully we'll have you back soon.
Yes, thanks to all of you.
Yeah. Right, it's good to be here.
All right, you guys have a good night then, and this is Dr. Finkelstein saying stay hyped.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I think that's how you should start the podcast, actually, is with.
You know, I should, from now on, I should just do a new Nintendo voice for every podcast. And it will be butchered because I can't do voices very well. But
you could do that Toad voice for the whole podcast.
Yeah, we got a couple good Toads in here.
Oh, God.
Hello, and welcome to the Negative World Podcast. I'm your host, Captain Toad.
Awesome.
That was almost like a Marge who was drowning in a bathtub. I don't know.
It does. Or like sucking helium or something.